meeting of the special meeting of the Action Plan October 23rd, 2018. Good evening, everyone. Any announcements? No?
Just a couple brief ones. Just to let you know, the wildfire lands ordinance went into effect last week. So, generally, as you recall, it's pretty far-reaching. It applies to the whole town. And generally, consistency, will be evaluated as part of land use action approvals, as part of landscaping plans, but then building permits that come across the counter for new construction. Essentially, the requirement is prior to placing combustible materials on the property, the fire department will evaluate for consistency with the ordinance. And it's primarily a vegetation management ordinance citywide. It will apply to roofing materials as well as when you have new fencing that connects directly to a structure. But make it clear, it does not impact the building permit review, issuance, and inspection process because that's governed under state statute. So that would move ahead. The only other item, because I know Commissioner Brown worked on the SDC transportation revision, the actual public hearing for that is before the council on Tuesday, November 6th, because I believe under state statute we need to provide 60 or 90 days, so that's why it's been quite a bit of time since the committee ceased their work, and now the hearing. We haven't heard much about that, and then if it goes smoothly, it should become in effect by the first of the year.
So. Okay. Thank you. Where are they at on the, what's the council at on the transit plan and stuff?
Well, they had a continuation of the hearing. It was last week. I think they had a really good discussion. Both Scott Friganesi and Maria and Roger made some comments, and I think they seem pretty good with the responses. We continued it to November 20th because we're still awaiting some transportation analysis to accommodate ODOT's concerns. And so right now it's November 20th, and we'll see if we can, we're working with ODOT and see if we can get their information by then.
Okay, anything else?
Well, we did have a meeting with that management, transportation management plan. We sort of finalized what I just talked to you about last time. We'll have another meeting in mid-November.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on, do we have anyone for public forum? We have two people for public forum that I know of, Hugh Scutcheon and Monica Neri. And because we've been having a great difficulty getting out of here on time, and last time we even had to stop a hearing and didn't complete a hearing because we ran out of time, we're going to limit comments to 3 minutes. Julie, if you could give your name before you start, please.
Hugh Scutcheon, 2253 Highway 99. You all heard that President Trump finally admits to climate change being a problem, and he says by 2100 it's going to be 7 degrees centigrade, which of course is a disaster. He says forget about it, we're not going to do anything about it. The IPCC comes out right after that and says it's really, really bad, and we'll have to be vegans and walk and all the good, a lot of those stops. Or else. Me, myself, and I, if we had all new, be all solar panels and all zero net and all with can charge a car too, which isn't going to happen anymore tonight. We're having a big discussion. Is that going to raise prices? Or is, if we, the look of Ashland and all that, the regular houses with all the little fancy roofs and pipes, is that going to raise prices? Well, the prices right now are going up, as you've heard. And so nobody can really figure out if we put solar panels everywhere, we got famous for doing that. And took care of our own new, at least. Our prices can go up. I don't know the answer to that. I kind of think they're going to stay the same. The city has an ordinance, it's called 3145. The ordinance establishing greenhouse gas and fossil fuel reduction goals and targets for the community and the city operations. Go to 040 climate recovery goals. Community has already been passed. Oh, we didn't see it. The city shall actively encourage community entities and individuals sitting in this room to make and incorporate achievement of the community climate recovery goals as set forth in the most current city council approved version of the climate and energy action plan as part of the goals for respective operations. That kind of might have been in effect for many years. A couple of years or a year. Next. My question is, do you really need ordinances and laws and all kinds of illegals to take care of the town and get yourself educated?
Thank you for your comments. Monica Neary? You're not hearing from... Okay. Please.
Could you make a question? Tonight I'd like to address the question, why have Ashland's multifamily developments largely not adopted the density bonus for major recreational facilities? I'd like to propose that if a submitted recreation type is one that is offered by Ashland Parks and Recreation Department, it shall immediately satisfy the code's intent and purpose for this density bonus. In doing so, we will enable Ashland to achieve not only higher density multifamily developments and more rentable units from buildable land and infill inventory, but also creative, higher quality developments. I've provided a piece of paper for you that shows in review of the code, chapter 18.3.9.050.3.8 states, points may be awarded for the provision of major recreational facilities such as tennis courts, swimming pools, playgrounds, or similar facilities. Is it the spirit of the code to only and always and only build tennis courts, swimming pools, and playgrounds? Is it the spirit of the code to only accept recreation types such as these that impose dimensions that make them unsuitable for a majority of R2 and R3 lots, those between 0.1 and 0.4 acres in size on the buildable land inventory survey? I think you'll agree this is not the case, but the word similar facilities is not well defined and it's not objective. What if a proposed recreational facility is evaluated with an easy-to-follow three-step test that is based on the definition of major recreational facility? Does it meet the definition of major, prominent, or significant in size, amount, or degree, greater in importance, or interest? No test is needed here because the code awards a density bonus that is directly proportional to the facility's development costs in relationship to the total project value. Number two, does it meet the definition of recreational, relating to or denoting activity done for enjoyment when one is not working? This shall be met by providing an activity that is consistent with the recreation that is offered by the City of Ashland's Park and Recreation Department. Everybody living an active life in Ashland knows and enjoys how well our Parks and Recreation Department has defined and provided recreation. Number three, does it meet the definition of facility, a place, amenity, or piece of equipment provided for a particular purpose? Are facilities provided for the proposed major recreational development? If this test is adopted, we will see more developers implementing major recreational facilities as part of their planning and design process, but we are not there yet. In summary, density bonuses for major recreational facilities have largely not been sought or implemented by Ashland's multifamily developments. Why? Because the execution risks and development delays from vaguely formulated purposes in an undefined assessment process outweigh the potential benefit.
Great. Thank you for your comment.
Thank you.
We have one piece of unfinished business, approval of findings for PAT 2 2018 2 in Park Street. Do we have any partner contacts?
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex
parte. No ex parte.
No.
None.
And I have none. Do we have any comments or edits to the proposed findings?
I distributed a proposed clarification of the findings that you have in front of you. It doesn't change the conclusions, but I felt it was important to include the definition of a multifamily dwelling in the discussion, since essentially we were evaluating whether this development fit into the category of multifamily dwelling versus group living facility. So I thought it was important for the decision to reflect the two competing definitions that we had to choose between, and then make it clear that in the findings we were determining that the nature of this development was multifamily dwelling units rather than group living establishments or room and board facilities such as dormitories, dormitories being an example of those categories in the code. So I'd like to suggest that we make that we adopt the I'd like to move that we adopt the findings in PAT 2 2018 00002 with the modifications set forth.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
Okay. No.
Any other
that sounds
any other suggested additions? I had one thought which was like similar to Lynn's, which were basically the dangers of paraphrasing. And that is in condition 12. It's the definition of family. That's an incomplete definition of family. It's a partial definition of family. And I would suggest we include the full definition of family here. Any number of people related by marriage or kinship, and of more than 500 related persons. Otherwise, it sounds like you couldn't have a family of six in there.
I'm willing to accept the amendment as part of my motion.
How friendly, thank you. Okay. Okay, so with those amendments?
I actually, there was one typographical correction, too, on page 12, second line, that the trees to be retained be water. It should be watered, ED.
Okay. So it's with that typo and those suggested edits, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The findings are passed. We have two public hearings tonight, both of which I think were continued. From our last meeting. The first is 188 Garfield Street. Derek, do you have any desire to give us an update? Or do you have
What I have is a few slides that I thought touched on kind of key issues, if you'd like that.
That would be great. Yeah, just to sort of get us back up to speed.
Roger, can you clarify this where we are in the hearing?
Oh, yeah. We are, we have a full hearing and continued the hearing. We had all the instructions were read, where everybody knows what they're supposed to do. We continued it to a date and time certain. So this is just a continuation of that hearing, and evidence and legal argument will be accepted without limit at this hearing. We'll have the staff report first, presentation by the applicant, which we should have the same time limit as typically, 15 minutes. Any public comment? I'd like to, because we have had such troubles meeting our time limits, and we have to go home at 10:30. Councilman's wisdom wants us to have our beauty rest, so they passed an ordinance to say we can't go past 10:30. We'll limit public comments to 3 minutes each. If you really have something substantive to say, you can't get in, please ask for additional time, but I think we ought to be able to get it done in that period of time. Then we'll deliberate and make a decision. Okay, Derek, take it away.
Thank you.
So I was just going to touch on, I think, what seemed the key issues last time, although I realize there's a number of other things that have been raised subsequently. But in terms of key issues, I think one of the keys for staff had to do with driveway separation. The applicant's initial proposal had proposed that these driveways on Quincy essentially be combined into a single curb cut. And one basis for that was the fact that there's an easement to a neighboring property behind that building on the left that is, I believe, 28 feet wide that extends down the property line, which runs currently between those two drives, and really prevents them from moving the drive to comply with standards. So they had looked to combine them into a single curb cut. They would have retained essentially two independently functioning driveways within that curb cut. Staff had some concerns and conflicts there. At the meeting last month, or 2 weeks ago, the applicants presented a number of options to address that. I think they've amended their proposal in materials that are in the packet, proposing option B as their preferred option, which would essentially keep the existing curb cut, the power pole and its guy wires, reduce on-street parking by four spaces, and use the drive aisle, utilizing essentially the backup and circulation area, and utilize the existing easement, which I did not show in red in all of those, but it's reflected in that red in the top illustration, is the easement for the adjacent property. That's really the issue they've got that constrains their ability to modify the driveway too much. So really that's one key. I think on-street parking came up and came up in a number of the materials subsequently. For staff, I just throw out some pictures here over, you know, various times visiting the project since it was Rivergate Church. There's been sort of varying levels of on-street parking, but there typically have been a fair number of spaces available. I think the applicants are asking for somewhere between five and nine spaces, depending on the option with the driveway. But there's roughly 600 square feet of frontage, or 600 feet of frontage. And roughly 30 spaces available, so some measure of on-street credit does seem appropriate to staff. In terms of sidewalks, we raised the issue. Last month, the applicant's narrative discusses having curbside sidewalks on the full frontage based on preservation of existing trees, but roughly from the area of that arrow to the left along Garfield and then up Quincy, all of the trees in existence are proposed to be removed, and the applicant's plan submittal show park row installation. So staff felt that from the area of the arrow to the right, it seemed reasonable to have curbside sidewalks and preserve those existing sweet gum trees, but really the left side of the arrow over, it seems more appropriate to add park row in those areas. And then sort of generally in terms of open space, here's the plan that was presented during the meeting last month. Plan of the courtyard area and the major recreation facility, and then the illustration of that major recreation facility. I think, you know, the code does provide a major recreation facility as an option for a density bonus. It discusses it in terms of swimming pools, tennis courts, playgrounds, and similar. Staff really had a question whether some outdoor lawn for kind of multi-sport court use of lawn area and barbecue area was an appropriate expression of that available density bonus. So we were looking for some guidance from the commission, and I think a number of the submittals you've gotten subsequently have raised that issue as well in terms of whether this really merits the density bonus. So again, those are really the key issues that I had sort of identified from last time.
Okay, any questions?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Going back to the question of the driveway, I mean, usually staff makes some kind of recommendation, and I'm wondering, I mean, I feel like you all are being very neutral here, and I guess I'm wondering if you feel that the choice that they made or what they're presenting now meets our criteria for...
I think having that easement that they have to deal with the neighbor does provide a constraint that they have to deal with. I'm not completely aware of how much negotiation has occurred with that neighbor, but assuming that they can't move that easement, it seems reasonable to staff that they should at least maintain the existing level of separation and not get closer to that driveway. If there has to be a driveway there by easement required to an existing house that's already developed, it seems reasonable to utilize that same location rather than trying to move another driveway or something, but not getting closer to the existing driveway to the east on Quincy. So I think that existing easement does pose a constraint that needs to be dealt with. And it seems like, at minimum, they should not be getting closer than what they are.
Any other questions?
So can you go back to the slide with the three different alternatives for that? Okay, so where are parking spaces being lost in option B?
No, I don't know the specific count of the parking spaces other than what the applicants have listed here.
But you said, okay, but when...
I mean, their initial request was to have five on-street spaces. Okay. And I don't think that was taking into account a request for some on-street credits for bicycle parking. So what they're proposed to do is have racks inside the individual rooms to accommodate individual bike parking. They have 12 additional outdoor bike racks that they're proposing now two on-street credits for. I don't think they were initially proposing those two on-street credits for the bicycle parking. I think they would probably be better to respond to the specifics of where those are shifting around. But as they've shown it here, they were initially needing five on-street spaces. Each of these options has a change in the additional on-street required, except for the bottom, option C. But as far as where they came up with those numbers relative to changing whether they're asking for on-street credits or credits for bicycle parking, they can probably clarify that better than I can.
Okay, and then the other thing, I just had a brief time to read through this one email that was there. So they were, when we were doing the TSD, and we were placing where bike routes were going to be, I just want to know where we are with, I thought we basically left that totally out of the TSD with the bike lanes on Iowa Street, simply because there just wasn't the right way to be able to do it. And this seems to be a question that they've raised, but my remembrance of it is that that's not really an issue because it's not going to happen. Am I correct or not?
And I remember. Without a copy of the TSP in front of me, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't recall. I don't think the curb-to-curb space is wide enough without removing...
Yeah.
Park, I mean, that was it.
Right. Well, when they were designating that was a firm in Portland, yep, that was creating bike lanes, like one all the way up Weimer Street. Mm-hmm. So there were some things that weren't realistic, and I just want to kind of get that clear before we go in, that indeed is not something that's really going to happen, and whether my recollection was right.
I think you're correct.
Was there an issue about the bicycle parking inside versus outside, because their conformance for bicycle parking was basically mostly inside? Yeah, because they had bicycle racks in each one of the units versus having enough parking spaces outside the bicycle.
I think one of the submittals that you have raises that issue. Our standards speak to allowing bicycle parking inside. It does say racks. The only rack standard listed in the code is the U-rack, which is typically not an interior installation. I believe, and the applicant can clarify, I think they're proposing some sort of hanger that would hang the bikes on the wall. Yeah. We have in the past allowed those. The one example I can think of is at SOU, we did allow hangers in the individual rooms as an option there. The standard in the code does talk about interior bike parking for employee bike parking, which suggests that it's a commercial standard for businesses, would be 3 foot by 6 foot to 4 feet high. That, so 18 square feet of ground area 4 feet high available inside for bikes. I don't think as a hanging space, but as just a space available for reserved exclusively for bikes interior. But that's listed as an employee parking standard.
Yeah. I would suggest that maybe we visit this sometime in the study session, because I think the point that was being made, you know, the bikes have gotten more and more expensive, a lot of them totally tricked out, and so, you know, just to have them on the outside, you know, I totally think that's kind of cool that they're thinking about making spaces for them. But I think that's something that we maybe should look at code and maybe clean it up.
So, it's unclear to me how many spaces of on-street parking are available after reducing for the newly painted yellow, you know, curbs. I drove by, and the yellow now takes up half the frontage on Iowa and some frontage on Garfield. And it's just not clear to me how many on-street spaces really are there after those are taken out. Do you know that? Or?
I do not know that off the top of my head. The applicants may have a specific count.
And just to clarify, are you saying, and maybe I missed it, but on Quincy, are you recommending park rows and sidewalks or not?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Park row and sidewalk on Quincy and that north piece of Garfield.
Yeah.
Alan, do you have one?
Yeah, I'm struggling with all the different terms for open space. And then you can help
me with planning permission.
Sort out open space versus recreational open space versus counting private patios, public common area that might be, I'm not sure what a semi-private is. I don't know what one wants to do in a semi-private patio. But can you go three stories and continue to triple count your patio and your balcony and your next balcony and just stack up open space indefinitely? What's staff's reading of the code for how you calculate all those?
I did send the question. So I mean, open space as defined in 1861 is a common area designated on final plan for the development permanently set aside common use of residents of the development. Open space areas landscape and are left with a natural vegetation cover does not include thoroughfares, parking areas, or improvements other than recreational facilities. So that's the general definition in 1861.
Right.
In 18.42 talks about recreation area requirements. That an area equal to 8% of the lot area shall be dedicated to open space for recreation used by tenants of the development. Talks about surfacing it in a way that is essentially suitable for human recreational use. And it says decks, patios, and similar areas are eligible for open space. And it also talks about play areas for children are required for projects greater than 20 units that are designed to include families, and their play areas are eligible to be included for open space. I think historically the commission has accepted proposals that show in a number of cases decks, patios, porches where there's enough usable space for someone, say in an apartment or multifamily development or single family, to throw a barbecue on their porch or patio and make some sort of recreational use of that space.
Whether it's common area or not.
Common area. Or whether or not it's common area, they've looked at kind of we have in the past looked at some private areas, but we've also, I think, in recent months had discussions of whether the intention of the code is that deck and patios included here be private, or if, as we saw at the Planning Commission retreat, I think 2 years ago, outdoor patios and decks can actually be a common amenity of the development,
like
229 Percy, and the commission first saw that you can do a deck or a patio area that's a common area that's an amenity or full development.
Sure.
And I think that's been a point of consideration that, at least in my mind, I don't think we've fully clarified.
So when we made our decision on the project at Mountain, and East Main. It's less than I remember this being a major issue, and I can't remember what how we decided. We had this whole discussion about whether or not we would allow them to count non-common areas. And I believe that we changed our interpretation from what they would expect. Can you remind us what we did?
My recollection on that one is initially the commission determined that porches and patios, private porches and patios, could not be included, and that open space had to be common area. But there were a number of elements in the plan initially that didn't clearly illustrate the treatment of the open space in terms of landscape materials. There were walkways going through, cutting down the area, which, you know, we talked about at the retreat a couple years ago as well, that you have here an area that's open space that has fences, and between the fences you have a walkway and narrow landscaped areas. Does that walkway really constitute part of the open space? Code language now says not to include thoroughfares. So I think when we looked at that in the 1068 East Main, and initially thought there was so much dedicated to walkways and private patio spaces and landscape areas that were not necessarily suitable for recreational use, when the applicants came back with a plan that showed a mix of common areas that were landscaped and clearly depicted to address the open space requirements at final plan, and they showed clearly how their porch and patio areas function, the commission did accept those porches and patios exclusive of areas, you know, circulating to and from the door, and there were some porch closet area for storing deck cushions and stuff where those door swings came into it. Just the area where somebody could stick a table and chairs and kind of use their deck for recreation. The commission did allow that in that most recent one.
You know, I think one problem is that the use of open space in our ordinance isn't always consistent. While the term open space is defined as a common area, and the definition of your standard side yard setback yard area, it refers to a yard as an open space, and surely people's setback areas aren't common. So there are some areas that, I mean, it needs to be.
So are we counting people's setback areas in the open space?
She's in different context.
I think there are some instances where we have
been begging them to bring it to us.
Well, not, and if I could follow up, the sort out form between open space and recreational landscape, or recreational open space, because open space defined includes landscaped area. It seems under 18.4.2, there's that surfacing part, which seems to be landscaped area that doesn't count. And then there's something else that's recreational area. So is anything that's not landscaped recreational area?
I think if it was not landscaped and it was treated, the deck and a patio as an example, whether common or semi-private, if it were for recreational use and it was treated as a deck or a patio, for instance, it could be. And the bonus does talk about, you know, major recreation facilities talks about a recreational facility. So, tennis court, pool, play area, playground. So those could be land, not landscape.
Troy, we've also seen several semi-private basically is a patio area, and she doesn't have a fence. And so you go in some development, we've seen that basically the patio is open to the walkways and places going by. So that falls more in the area semi-private. Private is those that we've seen that have fences. We've also seen several projects which have constantly seen that the idea of outdoor recreation also includes being able to go outdoors and sit down and have barbecue, as we're talking about. That fits well within private and semi-private. And then when we get into public areas, though, that begins to say how much of your public recreation area is only used for cooking, but it's still an outdoor open space that everybody can use. So we get those three definitions of which we use to kind of balance what we need to have in both densities and amount of open space and amount of usable open space. This is why the problem with the walkways that are planted, thoroughfares basically, that there's really nothing but a walkway here. It doesn't count. So I think we've gotten pretty close to where we need to be. We maybe not have nailed it down. the code with any clear language, but I think we've got pretty clear what we're looking at 9 times out of 10.
Did you have a slide that showed big green open space areas that you buzzed by? Because I'm unclear where the proposed open, I'm totally unclear as to where the proposed open space is in this project. Because it, you know, we just had text describing it, as far as I can recall. Yeah,
I think this was presented last month that showed you have really this large open space area here with the major rec space, and then you have these two areas here adjacent to parking and along the frontage. I mean, I think I had mentioned last time, I think, you know, the open space areas are really supposed to be areas that aren't available for development. So I think the setbacks and the walkways along the parking here really shouldn't be included in that. But generally they've shown these grass areas here and the area over here, and then they've also got in green the private deck and patio space shown on each one.
Okay.
Yes, sir, can you clarify what you just said?
Please go ahead.
Okay.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. So, if those areas along the parking are flat, and I mean they don't need that much setback from their parking, why are you saying that they wouldn't?
I'm saying if there's essentially a walkway there, people are circulating around the parking, that walkway.
The walkway
there, and the front yard setback area that couldn't be developed anyway. It seems to me like those really.
You're not saying that that whole area would be.
No.
You're just saying some parts.
I'm just saying fine tuning how you approach it.
Gotcha.
Do we know how much those three green chunks is? That, you know, what the percentage of that is? As
I think the applicants have talked about 23 to 21% somewhere in there. But I don't know. I don't know exactly, and I can't read this.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Derek?
Okay, besides R3, I want to make sure I'm clear that across Garfield and across Quincy, that's also R3. Across Iowa, it's R2. You need to look that up.
I would need to look that up and verify for you.
Look and verify that. I want to make sure I read that correctly.
I believe that's correct.
So
I believe so, but I'd like to look at it.
Okay, are we ready for the presentation of the applicant? Do we have the applicant here to that we can ask questions to?
Good evening. I do not have a 15 or 32-minute presentation condensed into 15 minutes like I did last time.
Well, our questions won't count against your time. I suspect we have some.
I don't think we need a new presentation.
No?
No. We should not have to have a new presentation starting from the beginning.
Please
don't
repeat it.
No, we don't want to.
I don't want to have
to repeat it. Thank you. We get it down to what the questions are and the answers rather than.
Yeah, I think the questions we
should be questions and only.
Yeah, I think the questions we have were about parking, about the open space recreation area, about the driveway exception, about the major recreation facility.
I will definitely speak to the questions, but I think that the Planning Commission should be aware of why there is this proposal for studio units and why there's not a proposal for a typical three-bedroom, two-bath, or two-bedroom, two-bath townhome, condo, etc. And that's because of your housing needs analysis, to rental needs analysis, the comprehensive plan. These are the overriding documents of the city, which say that the city needs more studio units. So that is why this proposal is before you, and not a 42-unit meeting all the standards, just 8% open space. So that would cover a lot of 70%.
Well, that's mostly what we care about.
No,
the project needs to stand.
You may pass around.
Yes.
The top plan guides that you try to do the code.
For 15 minutes? It's for 15 minutes.
So, just to reiterate, the housing needs analysis identifies that the city's efficient is 615 housing units. The sentence at the bottom on the left-hand side is on the page that what was off the page is that the findings are further substantiated in the property owner manager's question sent out by the city of Ashland in 2012, which showed that studios are most in demand, multi-bedrooms are least in demand. Most of the housing stock in Ashland was built, like 60% was built prior to 1979. This is another the same graphic that you saw before of the exterior. This is the neighborhood context. We've got a text into Kim Parducci, who is a consultant with the city of Ashland, and she worked on the city's CSD behind our Hollow Park stop bars go. Looking at the most current Google Earth pictures, it's kind of difficult to tell, but it appears that they go about 25 feet from the intersection, similar, somewhat standard. So I can't say exactly how far they are. We have not measured them. So I can't speak directly to how many spaces are lost by that those yellow bars. But so this development, much like the adjacent development across directly across Garfield Street, requires a density bonus in order to be developed. The development across Garfield Street has 7 units where 6 is the allowed density, so they obviously got a density bonus of some sort to do that development. This is a context mapping that shows that the location, the massing, and the unit areas, open space areas, are actually smaller than what's happening on a lot of the single-family lots in the neighborhood, and of course many of the multi-family lots. You can see towards the north end of the page, a third lot down, there's all those units there. Those are condos, and that's all parking in their front yard. And those are older units, but this just shows that this development is not this big, huge mass of structures that is going to go over the neighborhood. So proposed site development, this doesn't really change. We do have a driveway plan that you can see there that does show the driveway altar. What happens with the change in the driveway location is that we lose 4 or 3 spaces on the site. They're the 1, 2, 3 that are nearest to that driveway. Here's a graphic that shows that. This is the one that you have in front of you. It shows what the existing spacing standards are on the civil drawings. The red is where the driveway, if it was required to be the 50 feet away from the adjacent driveway, would land. And so it shows that island of no man's land that would be left there to get the driveway back towards that neighboring property. I believe Ray can speak quickly to the adjacent property to the east.
Yeah. The property owner that has the easement from there said they were willing to move it over about 5 feet, but they weren't willing to just let go of the whole easement and have to drive through an apartment complex to get to their single family home. So they wanted to, they're not giving up their easement.
Okay.
Yeah. They'll widen it to comply with the preferred driveway entrance, but they're not giving it up. They're driving through a complex.
So the amended civil plan shows the driveway relocation. As you're aware, Sandow Engineering performed a traffic study which found that the average daily trips and peak hour trips from this development do not trigger transportation impact analysis thresholds. Additionally, as previously noted, and considering the street classifications, the average daily vehicle trips on Garfield and Quincy are quite low. Quincy is less than 200 average daily vehicle trips a day. The last time it was counted was in 02. And then on Garfield between Iowa and East Main in 2017, there was 610 average daily trips a day. So if you take our 30 peak hour trips and divide them amongst the two driveways, there'll be a de minimis impact during peak hours on any driveways or any of those streets. As far as the packet goes, there were some amended findings addressing the driveway apron, essentially why we've found that this proposal to retain the driveway curb cut in its present location complies with the exception standards. Primarily, there's demonstrable difficulty on the site in meeting the standard because we can't control what a neighbor's easement does that was provided to that property owner before this property owner took over. Open space. This is the open space plan that's in your package. So this is the one that the text refers to, and this is the one that Derek had the graphic of. this open space plan demonstrates that the for the 2.1 acre lot requires 8% open space. In order to obtain the density bonus, you need an additional 10% of the total lot area. It takes us to 16,453 based on the surveyed lot area. So the outdoor recreation open space is proposed as a combination of semi-private patios. And we're calling them semi-private because they're not going to have, they're not intended to have like 6-foot barrier fences around them. They're intended to have a landscape buffer, so they're not intended to be like walled off from the rest of the open space. There's a landscape barrier again, but not like large fencing to protect the area or to make them completely private. As far as the 229 West Hersey goes, I'll use that one as an example since I was the planner on it. That project also requested the density bonus, 10% additional recreation space. Each unit has a private porch or deck. Those each counted. They also have a large common deck. Those each counted. So making a decision similar to the one on the corner of Iowa and East Main Street is consistent with what the Planning Commission has historically done. The surfaces are proposed to be, with the sports court, there's the one proposal of surfaces. In the event that the major recreational amenities go away, then the surfaces would most likely be a turf of some sort that's functional and usable for people. There's no thoroughfares included in this area. So the plan that you have in front of you, what has been amended, is you'll see that essentially the sidewalk areas have been edged off. We pulled it out of the patios where on the previous plan it touched the landscaped areas and then it touched the patios. So those have been pulled off, excluded the area around the vault. So the areas in bright green are essentially proposed as lawn area for the reading, the recreational, functionally surfaced open space. With the sidewalks edged off and pulled out of what we're using as screening landscaping, we're still around 18,466 square feet. I'm sorry, 18,361 square feet of open recreational areas. Of that, about 6,600 square feet is the decks in the findings. I refer to it being around 5,600. That's because I excluded about 15 square feet at each unit in front of the door, because historically the Planning Commission has said where a person stands can no longer be part of that open space. So even with that removal of about 1,000 square feet, we still exceed the 16,465 square feet of required open space. So this next slide has to do with I want to go back and finish one more thing. There's a question about recreational amenities. So the bottom statement has to do with what could be there. 42 units, 8% open space, 2 parking spaces for each unit, a whole lot of surfacing, a whole lot of residential amenities. I don't know what the code means by residential amenities, so we're assuming it means structures. So in this proposal, we have substantially smaller footprints, substantially smaller masses, substantially larger open spaces. Therefore, those areas are not being developed as residential amenities. They're being proposed as open spaces. So this was the proposal about major recreational facilities. This is the definition from the code on the left about major recreational facilities. The information on the right is what we proposed. Yes, we shifted our numbers around. Yes, our numbers are extremely low. If we got a bid from S&B James for our structure, they told us it would cost more than $75,000. So we still exceed it, but the property owner is in a position of, he just really would like to see a decision, and he doesn't want to fight with the city. He thought this was what the city needed, he thought this was what the housing needs needed, and what the Planning Commission has been saying, and so he dumped the 42-unit plan, came back with this one. He just doesn't want to fight. So therefore, he two units will be removed. The massing will not change. The structures will not change. Essentially, two likely ground floor units will turn into a maintenance storage facility, and one will turn into an office. So the proposal is for 70 units then, excluding the major recreational facilities, unless the Planning Commission agrees with our previous previous information that we substantially comply. The areas labeled as courtyard with the shaded structure and that sort of thing, those will just become usable functional lawn areas with no thoroughfares, maybe some walking paths or what have you, but nothing that would indicate that that's a thoroughfare through that area. Tree removal, we went over that last time. Let me get to the driveway piece. Was that everything?
I just like to add that we had done another design on this project after the church didn't work out with 43 bedroom, 2 bath units and attached 2 car garages. And in that plan, we had 86,600 square feet of built area. And there was no exceptions, no stretches, no anything, just outright, this is what it goes. This project has 42% of that as built structures. So though we do have 70 rooms, the 43-bedroom units was 120 bedrooms. And if we were doing that, we wouldn't really be having it much of a discussion tonight. It all works. There's no stretches. We feel that this project addresses a greater need than a bunch more 3-bedroom, 2-bath townhomes, and it has 42% of the built area massing on the site that otherwise would be much of a discussion and just allow it. So I just want to put out that these units are about the size of those 2-car garages each.
I'll add the bike parking and on-street parking credits. With the proposed driveway change, we lose 3 on-site spaces. We were previously requesting 5 on-street parking spaces. With this, we would request 7 on-street parking spaces and use 1 additional vehicle parking space in lieu of the additional 5 parking spaces. We had discussed whether or not to have additional bike parking outdoors. When I lived in Ashland, I had 3 bikes stolen. I now take my bike with me everywhere I go. Ray, who works with Ray in his office, he is an avid bike rider. He's had more than 1 bike stolen, so he takes his bike into his house. Most people aren't going to leave their bikes on a common structure if it's worth anything to them, because your bike will not be there or parts of it will not be there. So the closets appear to meet the intent of the code. The code, like Derek alluded to, has a whole lot of more details that could be added to it, but we feel that it's providing the secure bike parking space. I think you have your previous packet in the floor plan that shows the bike parking closets. And then we have 12 additional bike parking spaces outdoors. So essentially 7 on-street parking credits, 1 mixed-use credit for the bike parking spaces.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Don't go away. Do you have any questions?
So I just looked real quick. October 16th, 2018, we're talking about 72 units.
Yes.
72. All this information. We've been talking, staff presentation, everything. All of a sudden, boom, I hear, oh, we want 70. Now that throws all the other numbers off, and this plan you showed is 72 units.
Well, I'm just saying that.
Let me finish. Because the numbers now, they're not fitting. I think, if it was me, I would say, I would send you back for 2 weeks, put out on a piece of paper what you want with the numbers that add and stuff, but I cannot, with these numbers like this, to just get this and all of a sudden have to
put the two in there, and I can understand the two units, but that's going to change all these numbers.
It doesn't change anything, because the two units are based on the major recreational facilities density bonus only. And so if the commission says no to the major recreational facility density bonus, which is based on the dollar amount alone,
it's
100%.
It's going to change the parking.
Okay, so then we only need 5 on-street parking credits.
That's a major issue for us.
Why? Because we're reducing the number of parking spaces required.
Well, when we get to the discussion and debate, I'll tell you why the parking's a... But this isn't the time for me to do that. So I just want to make that statement.
Yeah, this is only question and answer and not argumentation.
Right.
Michael, you have...
Well, I was just kind of confused. It kind of goes back to the 70 or 72.
Mm-hmm.
So... You would still do the 72, is that right? Or you're not going to do it? You're going to...
We're not going to fight for 72.
Okay, no, I just want to make that clear. If we say you can do, the recreational thing there,
you'll get 72 units, absolutely.
Okay, but without that, then it just kind of goes... I just want to make that clear. Okay.
In other recreational area, the open space area, we're doing this structure with the barbecue and everything else. That doesn't change no matter what the units are. The barbecue area, the trench you're doing there, showing,
yeah,
it doesn't go away. It goes away.
It goes away.
So what would end up there would be just grass?
Open space surfaced in a recreational manner used for functional uses.
Okay, that's cool.
The reason that was 2 weeks ago, we just kind of went through 2-3 hours of angst and criticism for it, so it seemed like it wasn't.
Well, you I know this system from out there, not so
well,
here.
I don't think we understood the numbers. Any other questions? Any other questions for the applicant?
One more. I counted the 30 spaces. Commissioner Thompson mentioned that there's been some spaces deleted because of the yellow spaces. Have those been deleted on the 30 that are shown here? The corners look around Iowa and Garfield, they look pretty tight. I mean, it doesn't look like...
I took that into account when I did this plan. So this plan with 30 spaces has the proper distance.
What we don't know is how far the yellow striping has moved. Has the yellow striping gone beyond the city's code of 20 feet from the stop sign at intersection, or is it more? I'm guesstimating it looks about 25 to 30 feet.
Yeah.
But I did not put a tape measure on it. And I said I texted Kim Perducci, but I don't expect her to call.
So that would... That would cut a couple of spaces.
It would cut two, one on each street front.
And there's two corners, it cuts four.
Okay.
Two corners.
Well, the stoppers were not extended on Garfield Way, but there's still only 20 feet there.
And just to be clear also, it was mentioned that the architect preferred this driveway solution on Quincy. Actually, the architect preferred the one we originally proposed. This was this S in here to take out some of the on-site parking spaces is not a preferred way from us.
Yes.
It's a solution that we felt the planning commission wanted to see.
Okay. No. Hey, Alan?
Can you walk me through, how did you calculate the private patio, and are you including balconies or not?
We are, because each unit has their own patio or balcony. So, yes, those, you're only seeing the ground patio. So if you added up just the yellow boxes, you wouldn't get the number because you have to double it. Each unit has their own patio or their own deck.
And they're each about 120 square feet?
They're roughly 6x9, each one of them. And then we excluded from each one of those about 15 square feet for the door area, even though they're sliders, so there's not like a door swing. That's sort of consistent with what has been done, and that's where this new plan, we broke the patios out of it just so that you could see the color differentiation, but they've been included all along.
Thank you.
Can I just follow up on that?
Sure.
So just so I understand the numbers, so reading your most recent submission, it looks to me like you're saying there's 5,616 square feet of patios.
Yeah.
Cut. And that you claim would count towards the open space.
Well, I'm not claiming it. The City of Ashland Municipal Code identifies patios and decks. What we're proposing is, yes, that those would be included.
The
and then
patios
we...
15
by
6 by 15.
They're 6 by
15. I was just reading from your document how you calculated it.
Yes, so...
And then I'm looking at the green spaces here and adding them up, and they add up to 11,756. So aside from the patio balcony space, you've got open space or recreational space of 11,756. You've got 5,606 of patios for 17,372 or thereabouts, which is in excess of the 16,453 that right. is required. So that's how you're getting to your numbers. That's,
right.
That's how I understand it.
And the great thing about landscape plans is we are excluding actually quite a bit of area that it's a landscape plan. All it takes is Alan Pardee amending a few things and suddenly we have additional functional recreational open space. So it's not like we're up against a wall and we're within a few square feet. We have quite a bit of additional area that's just landscaping that could be amended. That's not a thoroughfare or not a setback area. That sort of thing.
Yeah, by not landscaping it, you could have it become
flat. Yeah. And landscaping, I'm talking about plants or shrubs or horticulture, that sort of thing.
So I also have a question about parking, bicycle parking. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering in terms of your, you know, you submitted some interior designs, and I was just wondering, where is that bike parking, that bike rack inside?
It is in, there's a boxed out area on your floor plan that shows where the bike parking
is. Is this AP 3.1?
It sure is. And right in front of the front door, you'll see a closet without a door, and there's a vertical bike rack there with a box on.
Oh, that's what the bike rack is, that dashed area box.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? David?
I'm still struggling with the parking. When we left after the last meeting, there were 72 studio units, 67 parking spaces provided, and it was a request for 5 on the street. And 2 of those units were created by the recreation space. So if the recreation space had been deleted, you said, we don't want that.
Or we don't want
it. Or the applicant said that if they didn't want it. Then that would drop from down to 70, and then we would have 3 spaces on the street and 67. So now I'm hearing we want to drop 2 units, but all of a sudden we're up to, rather than 3 spaces on the street, we're up to 7 spaces on the street.
That's because we're losing some of the on-site spaces with the amended driveway. So if you look at this graphic up on the screen, which is the one you have in front of you, that's where that shift is happening. Essentially, 3 spaces go away on-site. We either get 2 off-street parking credits for the 72 units and 1 bike, or just 1 additional on-street credit.
Anything else? We have a good bit of public testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In terms of public testimony, 3 minutes each, if you could please try to limit yourself to that. We want to get through this other project tonight as well. So if you could just come up 2 at a time. Matthew Lindsay, and then Bill Leroy.
My husband, Matthew Lindsay, signed up for the site but we had to do a handoff for child care reasons.
Okay,
so
great.
My name is Jesse Munker, so for the record, I'm
Dan. Can we be close, but...
Close the
I'm just looking for something to keep a prompt open. Thanks.
Thanks.
Please go ahead.
Okay. My name is Jessie Longhurst, and I live at 280 Garfield Street. So the applicants have presented information indicating that each unit is 496 square feet and should therefore be counted as 0.75 a unit. This is only true if each unit is measured without including exterior walls, which is not standard practice in calculating square footage. According to the August 23rd, 2018 submittal of plans to the City of Ashland, the proposed units are, when measured from the outside walls, 28 foot by 19 foot 6 inches, which equals 546 square feet per unit. According to the City of Ashland Land Use Ordinance 18.6.1, the definition, floor area gross habitable is defined as the total area of all floors in a dwelling measured to its outside surfaces that are under the horizontal projection of the roof or the floor above with at least 7 feet of headroom, excluding the uninhabitable spaces accessed solely by an exterior door. Floor area gross is defined as the total area of all floors in a building measured to the outside surfaces under the projection of the roof or floor above. By either definition, the units proposed for this property appear to be over 500 square feet per unit and should not therefore be considered 0.75 of a unit under City of Ashland Land Use Ordinance 18.2.5.080. The Planning Commission must deliberate within codes and ordinances as written, but most provisions leave room for interpretation, or we would not need a commission made of humans to examine them and reach a consensus. I suspect that the intent of the under 500 square foot bonus was never intended for a complex this size, and it makes a significant difference in the number of units allowed. The applicants are, of course, entitled to push the limits of the density calculations to their advantage. However, this results in a number of units far exceeding what common sense would dictate for a major redevelopment in a residential neighborhood with significant traffic and parking issues. For example, on a recent busy Saturday, I counted and photographed 56 cars parked on the perimeter of this project. The nature of events at the high school and the university means that such busy parking days are not rare. We urge the Planning Commission to use their discretion to consider these density bonuses in the context of the effect they will have and disallow them if they do not meet both the letter and intent of the law. We are certainly not opposed to the development of this property as a multifamily site. We are opposed to the sheer number of units based on what we believe to be incorrect representation of square footage and a misinterpretation of density calculations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment. Mr. LeRoy? I'm sorry, it's Sue, it's like Bill.
Yes.
Your handwriting's almost as bad. I apologize.
I'm happy to be candid. Hi, my name is Sue Roy. My home's located at 1253 Quincy Street, also known as directly across the street from this empty lot. Our neighborhood currently consists of mainly single-family homes that were built anywhere between the 1920s and the 1950s, craftsmen, bungalows, etc. There's a couple of small apartment complex, multi-unit buildings. There's one on the corner of California and Iowa that is 22 units, I believe. It blends in with the current neighborhood configuration. However, Section 18.4.5.030 of the Building Code clearly states for new multifamily residential developments, careful design considerations must be made to assure that the development is compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. The design for this complex was described in the meeting on the 9th as being Scandinavian or Danish model. The materials that they projected to use are metal guardrails. It looks like there's chain links to provide the panels. There's corrugated metal siding, cement panel siding, standing seam metal with wood siding, some type of entry canopy, and weathered wood siding. If you look at the design of this and you look at the neighborhood, this complex is not going to blend in. It's going to stand out. You've got all these modern angled roofs. Also, if you look carefully, and as the lady from the development said, the patios, the first-story patios, are only going to be protected by some type of shrubbery. There's a glass access door out from the living area to the street. That's going to be a wide-open invitation for somebody to come along and break in, because it appears to be a metal frame door with glass. Now, the study that was referenced was a 2012 housing study. What we need is affordable housing. But tonight and in the first meeting, never ever was the word affordable housing mentioned within the confines of this development. Also, it would be much more advantageous if there was not only single family or studio apartments. And what's to say that there's not going to be two people living in the confines of the 497 or whatever the square footage is? You have two people with two vehicles. Where's that second car in an apartment? So I thank you. I urge you to reconsider this and ask the designer to go back.
Thank you. Michael Devlin, and then Devin Huseby.
Good evening. My name is Michael Gutman. I live at 1269 Quincy Street, and I've lived there for about 40 years. I have a firm understanding of the need for small units. In fact, I designed and built to the maximum density, I might add, a four-unit building of 560 square-foot loft townhouses roughly 30 years ago. This was an infill project, with an emphasis on the word infill. It was built right about the time that John Fredonese, Brent Thompson, Barbara Jarvis, Carla Unville, and other forward-thinking planners nationally were developing the ideas of auxiliary dwelling units. I believe that the first ordinance for ADUs was to be no larger than half the size of the main house, or 1,000 square feet maximum. Other cities realized the benefits of infill. Eventually, it became state law that allowed for ADUs to be built on any single-family lot. To further the cause of infill, we created the 500 square feet equals one parking space rule, and we also added to that, again, with infill in mind, we got the under 500 square feet equals 3/4 of a unit rule. The intent of all of these rules was for infill. This is not an infill project. It is a fill-it-in project. It is 91,476 square feet of blank canvas waiting to be developed in a manner that is consistent with the values we share nationally to be welcoming to all people, singles, couples, families. I don't think this proposal is welcoming to all. I'd like to address density for a minute. The base density has not changed in the 40 years that I've owned my property. R3 base density is set at 20 dwelling units per acre. If you divide the 43,560 square feet into 20 units, each unit is allowed 2,178 square feet. That's for everything, building, parking, landscaping. My property takes up 9,048 square feet. Divide that into four and you get 2,262 square feet. 82 square feet over what the base density is. The development on East Main and Mountain Street, that parcel is 74,487 square feet for 32 new homes and one existing home.
Great. If you could finish up, please.
It comes out to a density of 2,257 square feet per unit. This proposal, 91,000 square feet divided into 72 units, comes out to 1,271 square feet. they're calling for 70% less square footage than the base density.
Okay, great. Thanks for your comments. Appreciate it. Devin Huseby, and then after Mr. Huseby, Stacy and Tanya.
Thank you very much, Planning Commissioner. Thank you, staff, for your work on this project. There's just a couple of things I'd like to do. The first thing is I want to make sure that the Planning Commissioners got the written comments submitted by myself today, yep, along with Michael Hiskey, my neighbor. Given the short time frame we were working with, they're fairly extensive. And I would encourage the Planning Commissioners, if you're inclined, close the record tonight to at least not deliberate tonight and take some time to review all the materials that have been submitted. The next thing I'd like to address is a couple things that were raised tonight. The parking spots, I can understand the confusion. The initial plan called for 67. Then in the supplemental materials they submitted to the Planning Commission, they were proposing to eliminate 5 of those spots. Then in the option B we saw tonight, it was only 4. And then today in the oral representation, it was only 3. I don't know what the parking situation is. And I go into some detail about the parking situation, in particular the lack of available credits for Quincy Street due to its narrowness. The bike parking is not so much a matter of, you know, what's the spirit of the code, what's the letter of the code. They don't meet either. There is the ability to provide outdoor bike parking that is secure. You can put it in a fenced area. In the city of Portland, there are office buildings with bike parking on the street, and they have locked lockers, and that's secure in Portland. And so I would really encourage you to look at our written materials and the bike parking as well. Lastly, the ever-changing story with the open space, I would encourage you to take a hard look at that. It's very difficult to tell exactly what they're talking about. The areas in green, aside from that central area, which they haven't provided any details or plans regarding, is what they refer to in the plans as incidental open space, which doesn't qualify for the appropriation bonus. I'm going to go ahead and save the rest of my time or let you guys move ahead. But I really encourage you not to deliberate tonight. If you're going to close the record, that's fine. If you're going to accept any supplemental materials, of course, I think you need to all have a notice regarding what materials are submitted, et cetera. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. And we have read everything that was submitted. At least I have. Ms. Antaya?
My name is Stacy, and today I live at 1235 Iowa Street, the condo complex on the corner of Garfield and Iowa. There was some misinformation that I just wanted to clarify. The stop sign and the yellow lines are extended on Garfield as well. I live right there, so I'm aware of that. So I just want to make that known. Also, my neighbor and other HOA members submitted written information. We appreciate you taking the time to read that. And I'd just like to say one quick note that I feel like the codes and the ordinances for the open space and the recreational space are being used to an advantage with, that they were not intended to create the maximum occupancy. And not to necessarily create the needs of our community, the housing needs, to meet the housing needs of our community, but I feel like when you're looking at everything, I feel like they are misused to create the maximum amount of profit, and I would just encourage us as a community to keep that in mind when we're reviewing the information. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Finally, Eric Chandler.
I've just recently purchased a house at 1273 Iowa Street, so in this corner of the rectangle here, I'm surrounded on two sides by this property, and found out kind of last minute. That was at the last meeting, but I had kids I had to get home to before I spoke. A lot of people have already mentioned the concerns, obviously, surrounded by four schools. It's a really high foot traffic area for children, and there's already a lot of problems and near misses transporting my own kids from school in that area. So I won't beat a dead horse, but it seems pretty obvious that if you put this much more parking and traffic in this area, that street, several streets there need more speed bumps and stop signs. My other concern is backing up to my back fence in my house. It's where you guys have set up for a little bit, the designers have set up all of the parking places, basically all facing my yard and the back of my house. And I think it's a safety concern. I have five kids that will be playing in that backyard. If anybody leaves their car and drive, if we pretty much kill my whole family, I think they should be required to put some kind of a stone wall or barricade of some kind to stop a moving vehicle. And two trees, I don't think, are really going to provide any sound or light barrier. That's about all I have.
Thank you for your comment. That's all the public comments. The applicant will have a brief time for rebuttal.
Gross habitable floor area, each unit will be reduced by 47 square feet roughly. They'll be 17 feet 10 inches wide and 28 feet long for 499.3 square feet. And it essentially reduces inches from the plan. So it's an easy fix, and it will be fixed. Design team wasn't aware about the gross habitable floor area definition.
Better from the outside wall.
Yeah, so it's fixed with the 17 feet 10 inch width, 28 foot length, the 499.3. Due to the short turnaround, that's why there's some differing language about the number of parking spaces that would be removed in the case of option B. When we received the civil drawings yesterday, three on-site parking spaces are reduced from the 67 proposed. So there's 64 on-site parking spaces with the option B being utilized. As far as bicycle parking goes, there's ample site room that additional bike parking spaces could be added outdoors, but there's no intention of not providing the bike parking spaces indoors. If it's the will of the commission to require additionals. The stop bars were extended only on Iowa and Garfield, not on the Garfield-Quincy intersection. Kim Purdy, she did reply. She said she believes it's 50 feet, but she can't speak conclusively to it. So that would remove a couple of spaces off of Iowa Street. She couldn't speak to Garfield. As far as parking, we did a number of parking photos that you had in your packet. We have substantially more photos. Saturday was sort of an outlier day. We had SOU homecoming. There was an SOU football game. There were two SOU soccer games. There was a soccer game at the high school. There was a volleyball game at the high school. And there was an event in Garfield Park. That's not a daily occurrence. So we feel that there might be times when there's a high demand for on-street parking, but it's not all the time. These are apartments. They are not for purchase, like you constantly are seeing in your multifamily zones. You're seeing for purchase townhomes. You are not seeing rentals. This is a rental project, and it's not this big profit-driven proposal. It's to meet the needs of the city's housing needs analysis, the rental needs analysis. These are not my documents. These are the documents of the city of Ashland.
Anything else? Any questions? No?
But can you respond to the compatibility question? I mean, there is a standard that says it shall be compatible with the neighborhood. And
I want
to give you an opportunity to talk about this design.
I believe the compatibility has, as an architect, I believe it has a lot more to do with the mass and scale of buildings than matching finished materials. In other words, we could do one building, maybe two buildings, like a number of the other apartment complexes that are down Garfield, another half a block, and they're very large. But the style is more in keeping with the neighborhood as far as finished materials. But I don't, as an architect, I don't find that compatible. Our building materials are not typical of the neighborhood, I admit that. But we're not in a historic district, and I believe that this is one of the few areas where you can, in Ashland, do something that is not focused on. but I do believe that we're compatible with what matters at scale. In our R3 neighborhood, I feel that it's very, we couldn't have done another design that would do that better. Every unit has three exterior walls. And if you look at the one slide that Amy showed where it had the footprints of all the buildings in the neighborhood,
it's an impact of
information. In fact, it's, I think that we're very sensitive to and successful in breaking up that many units to not be a big building or two big buildings.
Thanks. Anything else? Great.
Thank you. This point will close the public hearing, and do we have any questions for staff? Just have a procedural nature or anything like that? Not of interest?
You know, I was wondering, Commissioner.
You can't have questions of yourself.
No, I was wondering if Derek should just verify just on the timeline.
I think on the timeline, we're talking a 120-day timeline that ends, I believe, December 19th. So with assuming adopting findings in November and the appeal period and the 20-day noticing, we're very tight for the...
Yeah, I understood. Yeah, we talked about that last time. Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that we postpone the deliberation or decision. We need to get it done to meet state statute. So, what order would people like to address these issues in? I have parking and bike parking. Okay, go ahead.
I was trying to remember what it was. On-street parking is not required to be in front of the unit. It is so far up and down the street as we did on the last project.
It's required to be on the property frontage. So it's not with
the, it is the property frontage.
Yeah, so I mean, where you're not dealing with individual tax lots, they can look at all three frontages. It is discretionary on your part whether you're going to grant it or not, though.
Right, but it's the property frontage.
Yes.
That we're actually talking about. Okay, that's what I mean.
Okay, so I would propose we talk about, do you have any suggestions of what you'd really like to talk about first?
To the easy one.
Okay.
I think the driveway.
The driveway, okay. We're going to address the driveway first, then the open space and recreation facilities.
Yeah.
Parking and on-street parking. I think those in parking, including the bike parking. And then the major recreation facility when we talk about the open space as well. Okay. So what do people think about the exception for the driveway?
Can I ask Derek a question on the driveway? Michael and I were out there on the field trip. I think we went there before. There were the two driveways, and there was that 16-foot peak. Was about 16-foot.
I think it's about 16 or 18 between.
Now that they can't do the easement, is the way it's being proposed, we would accept the 16 feet, or are they going to modify that drive to keep their existing driveway and leave that 16-foot piece and just use that driveway, or are they now proposing to modify that driveway?
I believe the option that they've presented as their preferred alternative of among the alternatives that they don't really prefer is that it would maintain it in its existing location. So you keep the current separation.
Yes.
But you wouldn't be modifying the 16 feet.
So what I want to make sure is that they're not modifying it to meet the 16 and get wider, but then that causes them to lose the parking spaces. So, but they're not doing, they're losing the parking spaces for keeping the...
I believe that...
Okay, they're losing the parking spaces on the site.
I'm clear.
Yeah.
Okay, Alan? Sorry.
I may be the stickler on code stuff, but I can't accept the exception for the driveway standard. You know, as I read the code, an easement just isn't the reason why you're supposed to get an exception. You know, if you read the code for an exception, it says something dealing with the site. And an easement put on which restricts the use of the property, I don't think is the intent of the code for getting an exception. For flat dirt that you can develop to meet the code, this doesn't do it. Right? There have been other examples where a property owner restricts property with an easement and then sells it, and then the new developer comes in and pleads, oh my gosh, look at the easement that happened to my property. And it's just completely man-made. And I understand that the current owners may not be the bad actors and have created the easement, but I don't think it's the purpose of an exception. I mean, my understanding of an exception is there's something really tricky with the property. There's a boulder, there's a slope, there's a river. That's why we grant flexibility from the code, but not because there's some legal restriction that some previous owner put on the dirt. That's my feeling of what that's meant to mean. So in order to grant the exception, I think you have to say that there is something unique with the site or the proposed use that grants this extraordinary relief. I don't think you get there on the first one. The second part of the exception is the thing that's come up with is going to be as good as what the code is supposed to do, which is that spacing in the driveway for all those safety reasons. And here, I don't think the applicant has given you any basis to find that either. I think they've just said, because we have this easement, we want to just use the curb cut that's there. And there's no finding. I don't see how we can make a finding that says this proposed solution of just using what's there is as good as what the code is telling us we want. Because our job is to not say we like the project or we don't, because I really like the project. But our job is to make sure that it meets the standard. So as far as the driveway goes, I just don't see how we can adopt findings that meet the technical definition of what we're supposed to find for the exception.
So you suggest that the 50-foot standard should be applicable, or the
driveway spacing standard. Right. I think
the driveway spacing standard, which is...
I understand they don't like it, but just because there's an easement that makes this more convenient isn't a rationale to get an exception from the code, in my opinion.
Ben Newark, yeah. Any other comments?
Well, I mean, my comment with it, I mean, when we did our site visit with staff and took a look at it, you know, it was, again, one of the more, you know, I understand where you're coming from there, and it was more of a common sense sort of thing. If, for instance, we agree with you, then this project is dead. We can't even go any further because it eliminates, in order to do that, you eliminate at least one or probably two of the complexes.
Well, we can't redesign the project from here. Well, putting the driveway where it belongs.
But I mean, what you're saying.
They've got to go back and design it to code. But I think that's what our job is.
Yeah, the reason I thought that the exception could apply is because the city, there is an existing curb cut there to service that easement in the right way. So that's not really a problem on their site. That's an existing issue in the street right of way that is, you know, it's an unusual aspect of the site to have a curb cut accessing your property that you have no control over. And the city is not going to go in there and wall up that curb cut. The city will not, we wouldn't allow them to wall off that curb cut and, you know, take the access away from that house. There'd be a taking of their access. So the city isn't going to do that. So that's the reason I thought the exception should be granted, is that curb cut is there, and it's going to stay there because of the house it services.
I just don't think you can find that it meets the purpose of the driveway spacing by pushing all this vehicular trips down this driveway that's meant for... I agree there's a legal right to run one car or one residential amount of trips up it. That's just my
opinion. Yeah, but that's a parking. That's a traffic impact issue and not a sort of a site design issue.
Yeah. I was reading it the same way Roger was reading it. You're looking at it taking from one or taking from the other.
since we can't accommodate, and we should accommodate, and that end up in taking either from the houses in the back there that the driver services or from the property that they left. So I think what you're trying to do is reaching a bit to try to say this is not something imposed by the city when it is. And so I've looked at the same way that Roger looked at it when I was looking at what does the exception cover that has to do with who put it there, what is there for, and who do you take from to accommodate that.
I'm not saying I'm on the same the easement. I don't know if they have a legal ability to close the easement. I just think they have to design the project to meet code.
Yeah. Any other comments, David, please?
When we saw this and the project was designed, they had presented it to us the idea they were going to be able to work something out with the joint property owners. And they chose to do that, to submit that with us without having that confirmed with the property owner. Okay. They did that. What they didn't do is they didn't make sure if they had known the property owner was not going to accept it, they probably would have designed the project differently. They didn't do that. And that's with the applicants, that's the way they chose to do it. And I kind of for a different reason, I'm supporting Alan, that it's that driveway that's taking a few spaces, that's basically allowing a couple more units. There's just a little, without that little piece working on the corner that they thought they could work out, now to me the whole project doesn't work, and I think that they need to reduce a few units, move the driveway, and design it as if they had known that that property owner next door was not going to go along with that, because that's the four spaces. And then also, I have to think about the reason I asked the zoning question to confirm it was that eventually all the other properties there could be R3 to develop properties over time. Maybe two units here, or two parking spaces here, three parking spaces here, they can share on the street as they develop. But if they're all coming in with that level of seven, six or seven, there's not going to be enough on the street. And I think we heard that they're going to lose, they've already lost two probably on Iowa, and they've probably lost two on Garfield, so they're down to probably 26 now. But back to the original one, it's just too bad that they haven't got together with the property owner before they did the design.
Yeah, any other comments on the discussion about the curb cut exception? Michael?
Well, you know, again, I feel like, you know, that maybe we can discuss other stuff, but this doesn't apply. I say this, you know, there's no way that we can approve the project because it's not, you know, we don't have the design for where it's going to be.
Well, I think we should discuss everything and make a decision on everything, though, because, you know, this project could get appealed, you know, we could get overturned or something, and so it's really helpful to have all the issues that we can settle.
And even if this issue doesn't work out, I think we need to resolve some of these other things so it can eventually get designed in a way that will work.
Right. You had a comment? Ms. Middle?
Yes. I'm afraid I'm not adding much to the discussion, but I just want to say that my thinking about the project was very much along the line that Ellen was. I'm just having trouble getting my mind around how what they presented meets. I mean, really a very clear-cut requirement in the city about driveway spacing, and I think I'm a little bit kind of flabbergasted they didn't design around it in the first place, and why I haven't heard any argument that really shows that there's any equality of meeting our standards looking after.
Any thoughts? Okay.
So should we table the decision until we discuss the others?
Yeah.
Okay. Next on the talk about the, how about talking about the recreational open space, the major recreational open space? Do people feel like that meets the definition for major recreational open space?
Okay, well, I've been thinking about since we've got this, and I guess my one comment was sort of the changing of time. You know, when we used to, when we start to do projects like this and think about recreational space that we were thinking about, tennis courts, swimming pools, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, as the sort of the intent of the project seems that, for instance, it's not really suitable for families. So, the playground thing, but it's suitable for a lot of adults, and the recreational, I think recreation changes as time goes on. So I think it's a little antiquated to be looking at just, okay, you have to have like a swimming pool, tennis court, or something like that to qualify. I mean, the drawing, I would rather see, if I were living there, I would like to have amenities like that rather than just an open space.
Yeah.
So kind of, again, it's almost the same sort of thing with the indoor bike parking. It's something that maybe we should, again, discuss, and refine a little bit, because as time goes on, our needs and what the needs of the community does change.
On that issue, I don't agree and disagree with Michael simultaneously. What I see, what was actually intended, was a structured play area, whether it was swimming pools, tennis courts, or whatever, but something that's structured such that you can go there and say, this is an activity I can do here. Whether it's bocce ball, racquetball, lawn bowling, I don't care what it is, but it would have been structured. So I think the point they missed was whatever they're putting in did not have met the meaning of other, and other being something structured. And I care less what the structure was, but it's just not open grass. And that's where the problem I had with it. It's not a recreation, that is a structured recreation. And that's what I think the original meaning was when they were laying out these particular functionalities. They're all structured. They all have a facility, or they have a marking out on the grass, a marking out that, you would have to build in a badminton court. Something that actually is a structured play area that you can't use for other things. So that's where I fell apart on it. It's only at that level. This is almost a mute issue, since they've already said that they don't really need to do this. And so I'm really thinking we are actually discussing something that's probably dead in the water before we start, because they don't really want to make it part of the plan. But that's my interpretation. It should be a structured play area.
Okay.
So I think Troy hit on the piece. I started out not crazy about it, and then as I thought about it, and evolving, and really I think what they said resonated with me, that it is something more modern, and it's got to, but it's the structured piece of it, and really that's the piece for me too. And they're talking about building a structure. They've got $65,000 of a budget for a structure, but I don't really know what it is or what the play is. And I think I've come along to thinking something like this probably does fit. If there's that structured recreational area and they sell it to me, and it could be an outdoor living room. You've got these tiny little studio spaces. What you need is a community outdoor living room, not just some structure, some hard surface space. And I think in some of the renderings I can see a structure. I just have no idea. They never sold me what the structure play area is.
Play area, but it also could be a community garden, which would be a structured activity.
Right.
It's not a structure. It's a structured activity.
I agree with both of you that the code is archaic.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it is something that is, what's been proposed is something that is similar enough to the archaic code we have, which is, a basketball court, a tennis court, or a swimming pool, something that's a major sort of regular structured activity. Single activity kind of recreation thing. I just don't think it works in the definition. No.
Well, I would disagree with that. I actually think that the recreation proposal is great. I think that it's more likely to get people out of their houses and interacting with their neighbors and doing something outside than any of those other things, which could only appeal to a few individuals. And they're putting this fire thing out there. And, you know, I live in a complex, mm-hmm. you know, and that's exactly the kind of thing that would bring people out of their houses to recreate. More than anything else, probably. So I think this is a definition.
Yeah, and I'm sort of on that page too. You know, originally I was not really inclined to think that, but you know, the similarity in the code is also to playgrounds, and I'm sort of looking at this as an adult playground, and what would adults do? But I agree with your point. I think that's really well said. That you know, and I was troubled too by the lack of structure around the grassy areas. Is there going to be a net up there, you know, for the badminton court? Or, you know, I mean, it's just not fleshed out. And sort of your problem with the structure, it's very lacking in, you know, detail to sort of give us comfort as to what's going to go. But I'm inclined to want to say yes, as an adult playground, you know, in effect, that I think is, as a practical matter, something that adults in the community like this would use.
But if you're going to be outside of the definition, if you're going to be out of the four walls of the definition of swimming pool or whatever it says, if you're going to try and avail us of other, I think you got to really make a pretty good detailed pitch about how other fits.
Any other comments on that? Let's talk about open space. And I would like to take my prerogative to make one comment on the code before we have that discussion, is that the 8% required by the site design standards talks about open space. The recreation, and it has to be open space for recreation use. And so I think that definition in the back of the code applies to that. The density bonus, outdoor recreation space, doesn't mention open space at all. It just says outdoor recreation space. So I'm not sure that has to meet the definition of open space in the back of the code. It doesn't say open space. It says outdoor recreation space. And so I think we might be able to consider those semi-private areas as outdoor recreation space, even though we might not meet the definition of open space for the 8%. So I've lawyered that enough. What do people think about the open space proposal?
Well, I'll talk. These overlapping definitions have been thorn in my side for years. They kind of really drive me crazy. When we looked at it on the screen, you know, it was one thing that was really apparent is we have all in one place the requirement and its amount. Followed by, you know, in the same section, the description of allowing the patios. It doesn't say anything, and about, you know, and it doesn't say that it has to be common right there. So I would like us to clarify, but not in the middle of this application. I feel like the commission has been moving towards a stricter definition that requires more of our developers over the last, you know, year or two. I think that's a good thing, and I think that we should continue it to do that and get a lot more specific about what we're really asking them for and make it a good thing. But I don't think that expecting to do this particular plan to meet in kind of somewhat subjective or increasingly difficult standard is fair. So I think they've met the definition.
I think my question, I think I agree that you get to patios and decks because it's listed. I don't think you get to balconies. In the definition, when I read outdoor recreation space, you know, it's not the purpose of the provision to meet density bonus or incidental open space. That's kind of a different section of the code. It's the purpose of the density bonus for outdoor recreation space permit areas that could be otherwise developed as recreational amenities. So there's got to be some. I mean, I'm trying to sort through all the relationship between these code things. You know, otherwise it could be a recreational amenity. Maybe it's private, maybe it's semi-private. But it makes sense that for private, you know, list patios and decks in that section of the code. I just have a hard time imagining for the same little space of dirt, you could just keep stacking it horizontally and keep counting that square footage. So, I mean, I would support a number that subtracted out the balconies, because I don't think that's listed in the code.
Yeah, I don't think we can change the rules as we now get to this particular project. I agree with Melanie that we've been here before. And anybody who's been working in the city before knows this. And so therefore, to try to change the rules now seems a lot. If this is one of those issues that comes up at least once every year, one of these days we're going to sit down and they're going to allow us to just rewrite it, but we don't get to rewrite it here. And that's where I...
Yeah. Well, we have not really changed the rules. We've changed a bit about our interpretation.
You can't keep doing that type of thing. You know, yeah. You can't come and say, okay, on Project A, you get to do this, and Project B, you get to do this, and Project C, oh, no, we're going to change our mind. That's what we're trying to do.
Like, you're a lawyer. You know about legal precedent.
Yeah. So I think we're there.
It's only precedent if a higher court tells you.
We're there with the calculations we now have. We're there with the way that we've been doing it. We need to fix it, and we need to fix it tomorrow. Not today.
Yeah, I actually thought there was enough open space because with the sort of the semi-private spaces between the decks and the big green blocks, it was, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 square feet.
But that's landscaped, isn't it?
Totally, it's landscaped. Totally.
Because I think there's an exclusion for areas that have mulch on them. Mm-hmm. Example, that because the idea is that you can't really use it.
Recreate on it.
For the recreational open space, not for outdoor recreation. Outdoor recreational space is a different animal than what's described in the site plan.
I have a major problem with calling I don't understand what a semi-private patio is. It seems to me these are private patios. These
not if everybody can stand there looking, that's semi-private.
See, I just don't look at it that way. Somebody else can't come in there and sit on my table and chair.
Why not?
Well, because it's part of my unit. Because it's rented to me. You know, and so I have a problem with considering that open space. But I agree that it seems to be a code problem because we seem to have been prepared to count it in the past. Yeah. But I think it should be fixed and, in my view, excluded.
Yeah, I've never liked including private patios as open space. Debbie
has done.
Yeah, it's just a total dumb code. So we exhausted our tank.
You had the bike.
Oh, did you?
No.
Okay, parking?
No, bicycle.
Bicycle parking? Good people that
The issue is that externally, they do not have enough bicycle parking, and in the staff report, they need 30 required covered parking bicycle parking spaces, and they have not provided that. Instead, they've provided the indoor storage. And the argument is
the design criteria, it's not what the code requires.
Right, it's a better solution for people who own bicycles by far. I know where mine is. It's in my garage. All the time. So I agree with their argument, but then again, we're looking at what the code requires.
That's an argument to change the code.
Right. And so we basically need to require them to put the covered bicycle parking out. Whether people use it or not, they probably won't. It'll probably become nothing but an area. I don't know if we have the ability here to say you don't need to put it in. If we need to put it in, we need to put it in. If we don't, we don't.
I like the
solution they've given. They have some outdoor parking for bicycles, mm-hmm. and most of it. You also have your individual spot inside. That's what I would prefer to leave it with. I don't know if we can do that. We're being code strict, but we can't.
Yeah. You didn't ask for a variance from that. No. Exception.
So they didn't ask for an exception or a variance. They just need to provide the parking space. And that's it.
And what were people's thoughts about the on-street parking credit?
you're excited about this, I can tell.
Well, I'm going to step in then because they are allowed so many parking credits, they can get the number that, I don't know, they could ever reach the number that they're allowed. And they're only asking for 9, I believe. And if they have the 9 spaces, then they should have the 9 spaces. So I think to try to tie it to everything that happens in and around the site is a real issue and a real problem. We're dealing with the site, though. And we're dealing with what this will actually have to use on on-site and off-site parking. They meet their on-site requirement. They meet their off-site requirement. We can try to pretend like they don't, but that's not going to happen. They do. We would like to have them not use any on-street parking, but that's just like saying people who have houses will put all of their cars inside of their garages. I've driven this area for 5 or 6 times, and I've looked at it and it says they could have parking passes for people who actually live in the neighborhood, get their cars off the street, and be allowed to park there. I think if they did that, their neighborhood would go in arms, because everybody out here probably should be parking in their garage, and they're not. And so all of a sudden now your parking pass becomes a real problem, because you don't want it because your car is on the street, and you only get the number of bedrooms you have. So the solution is, unfortunately, is kind of stuck the way they are. They meet their parking requirement on site. They're allowed to have so many off site. They only need 9. They meet the 9 off site. It's done.
Yeah. Well, then any other comments? Hey,
whenever we get to the credits, it doesn't say they can get them. They have to do is study to show that the space is in their server.
It does have to be based on some
other. But the surveys we do, or Google Map, or somebody submits a photograph, I would think it should be done over a week period, and we set up a policy, or staff has them 4 times during the day. Before they go to work, middle of the day, afternoon, after they come home. And you do that 5, 6, 7 days, and you've got the data so that the public knows it and everybody knows it. It's the same data rather than everybody submitting pictures and whatever. So and that's not just for this project. I've been concerned with that on others. The other one is as I brought up, on the build-out of these areas. If they get 9 and somebody across the street will get 4, eventually, I think you have to look at the potential development of the whole area, because there's 9 there today, but we don't know that, because I haven't seen a good parking study.
Actually, one of the neighbors, Mr. Hughesby, did it from 10 through 16, and there were 3 to 6 cars on Garfield in the morning, 3 to 5 on Quincy, and 0 to 3 along Iowa. But then his testimony and everyone else's testimony is from there's an SIU.
Does he have time to
know before? It's in the package.
Okay.
So I think the evidence does show that at least when there's not a big event, and there's not a big event at the high school or SOU, and that's going to blow up the parking everywhere. Those are unusual events that when there's not a big event like that, there is parking available, and that's all we need to be able to find. And I don't think we have the discretion to go look at, you know, potential cumulative impacts of what might happen down the road.
Disagree there.
You know, I think it may be a good idea. It's just not what the code tells us to do. So I thought that the on-street parking was okay myself. Now, were there any other issues we should discuss before we make that decision?
Can we just go back to the parking, the bicycle parking design standards?
Yeah.
So, Troy, were you saying that you were comfortable?
Where is that?
It's 18.4,
page 453. Page much better than all the bloody
yeah.
sections. Thank you.
Troy, were you saying that you were comfortable that the interior private bicycle parking met the standards of code, or you were concerned that it did not?
Neither one. I was saying that they are required to put in 30 covered parking spaces outside.
Outside. So what they've done does not meet the code.
It does not.
Okay, yeah, because that's what I'm concerned
about, too. I'd much rather take the one that's presented us.
Yeah.
If we could figure out a way to how to take covered parkings, covered bicycle parking means inside your house. It's covered.
Yeah. But the applicant also said they'd add more covered bicycle parking.
Yeah, which is providing bikes or lockers outside the main building underneath and on the marquee.
So right. To B.
What about the accessible by lockers?
To B.
I think their solution is much more elegant, much more, you know, and should be allowed.
I think what they're proposing does mean
under 2B. Under 2B. I mean, it says provide a bicycle storage room, bicycle lockers, or racks inside the building as a way to meet the design standards under I-2B.
Okay.
No, then we're good with where we are.
Right. They have presented racks inside the building.
Right.
Individual racks. That works for me.
Therefore, we need to eliminate 11H in your recommendations.
So, is anyone brave enough to make a motion?
Okay. I move that we approve the project with the amendments that we have discussed, such as the removal of 11H.
Troy, can I suggest too? They proffered a redesign to reduce the square footage of the unit.
To bring the square footage into less than 500 less square feet from outside the walls instead of the inside walls.
So you're in favor of granting the driveway exception?
Yes.
Based on
their proposed
driveway exception. The Pierce analysis.
The
option B driveway proposal. I think that's the only one that's still there.
So sure.
The sidewalks as amended, the open space reduction, the reduction from 72 units to 70 units.
Because you're omitting the density bonus for the outdoor recreation space.
Correct.
Yeah. This proposal is to not grant the density bonus for the
driveway is good, the parking is good, the sidewalk as described when they have to do the road parking. The elimination of the open space bonus for the structure and the bicycle parking is fine.
But the open space is okay based on recreational open space not having to be available to everyone.
Exactly.
Okay. And the density bonus, which doesn't mention open space.
Right.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
I beat it.
Michael? We have talked about a lot of that. Not that I want to spurge you from talking.
I know. As I've gone up and down this street pretty much my entire life, and I've noticed, projects like this and the same thing like on Park Street become, they become very controversial because it is in a neighborhood. And yet, we kind of look at what the alternatives are here by actually what could happen, like Mr. Kistler has said that could happen on the property is exactly what Ashland doesn't need. What Ashland does need is this. I don't have any problem with the design of the, because again, if you look up and down Iowa Street, there are a lot of bungalows. There's also a lot of other stuff that's really not, there's a whole mix. That's kind of the cool thing about Ashland, is that it's just a total homogenous type of neighborhood. You know, it would really trouble me, you know, if we don't get projects like this one, because we've been needing them for 30, 40 years.
Any other discussion? I'm sorry, are you finished?
No, I'm done.
I would just like to say that I am sorry about the recreational amenity, or whatever it's called, the developed outdoor recreation piece of this, because I think it's sort of a failure of evidence. I think that it would have been possible to build this out just a little bit more, a little bit more definition in some of the lawn areas, though most of it really being fine, and at least in my vote would have been that I would have found that it you know, met the similarity to an adult playground kind of thing. You know, and I'm sad that, you know, the development, if it's approved, will not have an area like that where the community can gather and have structure, have a table, have an outdoor barbecue, you know, have an area like that, and possibly some outdoor gaming areas. And I just wish there was a way that the applicant could flesh this out a little bit more and qualify for this bonus.
Anything else, Alan?
I won't support the motion for the reasons I mentioned earlier, but I really agree. I think it's the type of project that we need. It's those square footage units that we need. I think it's, you know, but what we want in that regard isn't really that important. I mean, that's a question of the zoning. I mean, the first act of this is it's zoned and the code is the code. And our job is to determine if the project fits the code, not whether anybody's making money or whether we like it or not. Except if they wanted 100 units, we couldn't approve that. We can't get there from here. And if the neighbors only want 20 units, we couldn't say that either, because it doesn't, the code's the code. So I just wish, I won't support the motion. I think if we denied this application, I'd like to see the applicant come back and really flush that out. I'd rather see them have 72 well-designed units with an outdoor living room for the people who are going to be living here. I think they could go back and make it better if this motion fails.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're looking, I mean, your biggest objection, it seems, is the driveway separation.
Well, I also don't think they've calculated the balconies right. I don't think that they flushed out the major recreational facility. But I don't think it's fatal. I think you go forward and you actually fix those things and you make the project better and meet the code. And that's what I think my job is here, is to ask them to do that, not to just say, well, I think we need these units, so we give them 9/10 of a loaf. But I think they could do it.
They would?
I'm not going to support the motion. Was close. The one thing, and I keep looking at the drawing there, and I see the lawn there, and by as long as just open space, but if they have some type of a defined structure that stays there, like badminton, horseshoes, a set that they compete with. It's a set one and it stays there. So there's always going to be a badminton court out there. What this means is that they would not get the two more units. That lawn would still be there, and if someone wants to go to Kmart, and is there a Kmart anymore? I don't think there is. But anyway,
for sure.
And you could buy a badminton court, or you could buy the games that they could set up. They're not competitive level, but it still serves that purpose. Everybody goes out there and has a good time. I also, whenever I see the grass, one of the biggest things we never talk about, but will be, well, most of that, is where people will go out and walk their dogs, communicate, and there's more communication when people are walking their dogs, friendship, that's how people get to know their neighbors and everything. But that'll all happen. You take the two units away. And then all that takes the street parking down, and that would have put me right there. But then there's this easement. And I don't think, as a commissioner, we should be bailing people out on an easement if they don't do their homework before they do their design. If they had done their homework on the easement,
you're basically, I'll be honest and say they made a mistake. They should have gone and worked the easement out first, and they didn't. And here I'm being asked, because they didn't do their homework on the easement, to push some more into the project, which they wouldn't have been able to push if they had solved the easement. And then if it wasn't for this easement, they had done with the recreation space, got the two spaces out, the two units, everything would have come together, and I'd be voting yes. But for us to be bailing someone out because they didn't research an easement or work it out with their neighbors, I don't think that's the responsibility of the commission.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's just try and wrap it up.
I know. I'm getting really tired of this discussion myself, but I just need to say my piece. The thing that bothers me most about the project is the driveway. I'm thinking that I would probably let that go, except that I think the commission is making a mistake by not acknowledging the value of the recreation facility that they're providing, and I think it would be a much inferior project if we take it away. So I'm not supporting it either.
Okay. For another reason entirely. And I think that the driveway works because there's an existing curb cut there. The curb cut's not going away. That's a unique situation to have a curb cut on your property that's not going to go away.
And, Roger, how do you meet the second aspect of the test? What's the finding to support the second test?
I think it's better for the transportation facilities and connectivity to have the two curb cuts along that street and three, making them add another one. And you're going to have three curb cuts along there.
Well, no.
Why would you
have three?
That curb cut's going to stay there. The curb cut to the house is not going away.
Yeah, but why is there a second one right next to it?
They would have to put another curb cut in farther away from that, down in the middle of Quincy Street.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Because they need two entrances and exits.
But that curb cut would still just serve one house.
It still makes the street a mess, chopped up with all those curb cuts. So I think it's at least as good as
three.
This what
there's three places.
There's
three
units in there.
Yeah. A roll call vote. Ready to vote? Yes.
Commissioners Pierce?
Yes.
Midland?
No.
Dawkins?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Harper?
No.
Norton?
No.
Thompson?
No.
Okay, so the application is denied. 3-4.
Yes.
Unless you want to try to remove
the motion is denied. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
What do you think, Lynn? Will you do it? Well, what I'm struggling with is, because I would like to preserve the outdoor recreation amenity too. I'm wondering whether there's a condition that could be attached, or whether it's just...
There's a new motion that would say approve it, but with the 72 units that includes the recreation facility as proposed. That's basically what you need with the new motion.
Right.
And you basically are okay with it, except you like giving the two unit bonus for the recreational, the adult playground.
Right, the adult playground.
Back then. So you make a new motion to approve it with 72 units.
Right, but I guess I have a little bit of a problem in terms of the build-out of the outdoor recreation space as well. I feel that the evidence does not quite support the build-out the way it should be. And that's what I'm struggling with is there a condition that will require them to actually construct the amenities for these courts?
They would have given us 72 units to require.
Well,
the evidence in the record.
But we don't have any evidence to support it as to what it would be.
Senator, we have the rendering there. Do you have a drawing?
No, we actually have the description and the writing of it. What it was.
There is a description of it.
Yeah,
and a plan for it.
Yeah, but my concern is I don't feel that it's my sufficient. You know, I want that amenity to be a little more of an amenity.
You want it to be nicer?
I want it to have more build out, you know, the structural features that Troy was describing in the lawn space. It's just two big lawn spaces. Without, you know, the notion that those are courts of any kind. I don't even understand how they are.
And I think their recreational space is basically the building and the patio area with the barbecue and
the lawn is to be multi-use. There's a piece of land in front of it if we don't allow the two extra units in that. Then you just get a much bigger.
You just get a bigger lawn.
Yeah.
In other words,
I understand that. It's these two areas on the end that are being presented as if they're outdoor recreation courts of some kind that really aren't much of anything.
That's part of it. I just thought that the center of the court was here.
I thought it was.
Okay, they can be set up. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Steph could help us by suggesting a condition.
I don't know if you want to clarify. I mean, I think they talked about multi-use lawn games. Do you want to say they need to have courts with specific facilities? I don't know, nets or...
I think that's... I think that's kind of silly. I think it's, you know, it's open, and as even Hayward said, with the local... Kmart, buy a badminton thing, and you go so to set up croquet, do whatever, you know, because you have, you know, the idea that, you know, and by the way, Lynn, I support what you're, you know, both what you and Melanie, because I was sad to see that go away, because that's what really, to me, makes a good project. But I think that, you know, by having that one structure there does give it structure. That's what I on my hat on.
And make a motion.
No, I've already over second.
You really want
to here we go.
Okay,
I'll make
the
motion.
You should make
a
motion.
So I'm doing move for approval with
72 units.
72 units. We're accepting their plan for the major recreational facility and the alteration for the size or the square footage that calculates to the exterior of the building. Is there something else?
Bicycle parking.
We're accepting the bicycle parking inside the
building. Right, by eliminating 11. Which one was it?
H.
11H. 11H.
And granting the exception for the
driveway.
For the driveway.
Option D.
Yeah. Option D.
But not the sidewalk and street trees.
But requiring park roads as staff suggests.
And what's the finding for how much open space square footage you came up with?
They just need to prove it, which they will need to do anyhow in their final. They need to prove they've met the requirement in their monthly final plan.
We need to adopt findings to get the... Are they getting the density bonus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's how they get the 72 units. And it meets it according to the calculations done on AP1.1 calculations. They're well within.
Is that your motion?
Yes.
Can you give me a second?
Second.
Okay. And any further discussion, or if we want...
I have to say I want... supported, as I said, in Ashland, all the easy parts are gone. And all the ones we get now, they have some kind of a little problem with them. And this one, it's the easement in the driveway. So we're sending a message out there, overlook the problem, design it, go to the Planning Commission, they'll approve it. So we sent the message.
Okay. We haven't heard yet. Any other comments? Could you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Brown.
Yes.
Norton.
No.
Harper.
No.
Thompson.
Yes.
Midland.
Yes.
Pierce.
Yes.
Dawkins.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Motion passed, and this project is finally out of our hands for a couple of weeks from now when we will see detailed findings. Let's take a few minutes break and try to project what we're doing for the project. Okay, can we reconvene and try to get the decision done?
6 to 7. Yeah, and I move that
you move to
we
the
stay
to 10:30.
10:30. Yep.
Okay. I second. So you stop the booking. Anyone else second? Flag is floating.
No, second, okay, we're going home. For Hayward, Hayward, Melton.
Beyond 10, beyond 9:30, up
to
motion to move to second, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Who seconded that?
Lynn.
Lynn. And we are, we actually read the instructions for this before the meeting last night, and everyone else was here.
Yes.
What
the
hell are they? Just in case someone new, and I think we may have some new faces here. The order of proceedings are going to be ex parte contact, challenge, bias, objection, personal interest, staff report, applicant presentation. Any public testimony, rebuttal by the applicant, close of the hearing, and close of the record, unless there's a request to present additional evidence, in which case we'll consider that and either continue the hearing or leave the record open. Advice from advice from staff and deliberations and decision. Anybody wishing to speak, please complete the speaker request form and come forward when your name is called in the public comment section. Please address your testimony to the applicable criteria. The substantive criteria are contained in the land use notice available in the back of the room. You should address all your comments to those criteria or other criteria you think should be applicable. Then you're right to a proposal. But you must participate in the public hearing orally in writing to appeal our decision to the City Council or the Land Use Board of Appeals. Prior to the official close, anyone can participate and may request either a continuance or to provide additional testimony after the hearing before the record is closed, and we'll make a decision on that. Please avoid contacting the planning commissioners about the subject of the hearing outside the hearing itself. Please abide by the established order and follow the directions of the chair. Thank you very much. Any ex parte contacts since we were with
no
the
ex parte.
No ex parte. I did decide this.
No ex parte.
Site visit on.
Alan Sullivan.
Site visit, no ex parte.
Neither.
No ex parte contacts. Derek, could you?
Yeah, could you have said before just a couple quick issues?
We're familiar with the site since we did the road credit union thing a couple years ago.
Right. So I mean, the first issue I seemed to be raised at the last go-round had to do with the original shadow plan approval, and it seemed to be there was some question about relying on the shadow plan as a basis to look at dwellings in a non-residential zone. The code talks about percentage of the site that's commercial versus residential. Staff believes the commission could find the original shadow plan provided a space development plan for the site to prevent piecemeal and uncoordinated development. The site utilities and access were planned between the parcels in keeping with that shadow plan, and the council accepted the shadow plan as a means to address building intensity standard when looking at the combined site rather than individual lots. On that basis, staff believe the commission could reasonably consider the standards for dwelling in a non-residential zone in AMC 1823-130 in terms of the original shadow plan site rather than in terms of the original component lots. And I just threw in the code section that talks about in 1823-130B1, if there's one building on a site, ground floor residential uses shall occupy not more than 35% of the gross floor area of the ground floor. Where more than one building is on a site, not more than 50% of the total lot area shall be designated for residential uses. So I think there is that use of both site and lot in that standard build-in pull-out Black's Law Dictionary and pull up the definition of site as land made suitable for building purposes by dividing into lots, laying out streets, and providing facilities such as water, sewer, and power supply. But I think that's one issue that's likely going to be looked at further. In terms of the other items that seem like may be worthy of further discussion, the applicants have proposed reduced parking requirement for affordable studio units based on a parking study from the City of San Diego. They're proposing 20 parking spaces for the 25 studios. Then for the future building on that lot along Ashland Street that hasn't been designed yet but would be developed in the future, they proposed a joint use or mixed use credit with the Road Bridge development proposed here. 1843060D does provide for joint use of parking facilities between separate parcels where the need is shown to not materially overlap, and provided joint use right as evidenced by the lease or contract and the applicants have indicated they're willing to deed restrict here. And the applicants are proposing to provide five spaces where office use of that future building would require nine spaces. The remaining four spaces would be dealt with through a joint use credit based on the road bridge development not having a big daytime demand, and the office space not having a big nighttime demand. The other thing just to point out, this project is actually subject to a 100-day rule rather than 120, because it's an affordable project. So it has similar time constraints. We have to have a decision, final decision by the city, including appeal, before January 1. So okay. There are time issues.
Lots of time. Anything else that you would like us to see, you know, and run us to the site plan here? In the interest of time, thank you. I mean, we did get this to the reader and all. Any questions for Derek about the project? No? Well, we got to hear a little bit from the applicant last time. If you can finish your presentation, no need to repeat. And sorry to make you wait so much, but the Garfield Street project is very important to the community, as you heard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Clark Stevens with Richard Stevens and Associates. We're located at 100 East Main Street in Medford, Oregon. With me this evening is Mr. Jerome White with Kessler Small and White Architectural Firm here in Ashland, and Cindy Dyer with Columbia Care for Road Ridge being the applicant for this application. So we'd like to start out with the history of the Chateau plan, and all that
so
way.
Jerome White, 253 Third Street in Ashland, I'm KSW Architects. So briefly, the history of the Chateau plan, some of you are familiar with it because of having presented the road credit in this project. One of the things that I want to say about the Chateau plan is that one of the concerns is that it was piecemeal and uncoordinated. And I'm here to say that it has been completely coordinated with road credit union from the time that we put together Columbia Care with the credit union. At the time of the appeal, we presented and introduced Cindy Dyer and Columbia Care as a potential developer of that property. Well, through a coordinated plan, we've been working together with the credit union and Columbia Care to have them purchase and develop the property. They have since purchased the property. We're still in communication with the credit union. We're still coordinating the development. So, and further, going to the lot parcel 2 and dividing that up, we're coordinating that in that we're going to keep with the Chateau plan of the proposed two-story building. It's basically really all that anybody could do out there in that front to meet our FAR. We're going to be exceeding our FAR by a small amount. And part of that coordination, future coordination for that parcel, is that we're anticipating that front lot can meet more parking. So we're proposing that joint use credit, day-night offset credit.
Yeah, so with the approved Chateau plan as our template, the original had four separate structures. Technically, it is now three because we are connecting the two structures with a skyway walkway. So by definition, it's three structures with four footprints, if you want to call it like that. So the original Chateau plan represented this as a multiple family structure with some commercial down below. And with this design, Mr. Weiss prepared this as a thoughtfully planned multiple family project for low income housing. This is in the C1 district where it is allowed to be used for multiple family. In 2016, Road Credit Union was required to demonstrate that we had a minimum of 50% floor area ratio for the lot or the tract. And in my correspondence, October 16th, I kind of outlaid why we believe this shadow plan still is in effect and why it still can be applied today and why Loder Credit Union participated with the shadow plan over both of the parcels along with that property line adjustment to show what the property's configuration looks like today. So as part of the shadow plan, it was also required to demonstrate that 50% of the use was, or less than 50% of the use was for residential, and that the structures occupied a majority of the street frontage along Ashland Street. So with the approval of that, it was demonstrated in 2016 that those standards were in compliance. In addition, with that, the multiple family residential being in the C1 zone had to address section 18.2.3.130 for the special use standards within the C1 district. And again, it was demonstrated that we had less than 50% of the residential use of the property, and which was then consistent with the shadow plan of record. It also demonstrates that we are less than 30 dwelling units per acre for the C1 district, and that we meet all the setbacks. You notice on the plan that on the east side we also have it's a 20-foot side yard, and then we have a setback of 10 feet so that we can still maintain the side yard setback along the east side. We're in compliance with the landscaping percentages and the solar setback that, for the property to the north. The solar setback plan is in the record and demonstrates that we are in compliance with those standards. And this plan can demonstrate that we are still greater than 50% for the FAR that was approved on the project, and that the unique part about this development is that 100% of it is for affordable housing. You know, this is a very unusual project where the entire project is affordable, and Columbia Care is in the business to take care of people and get them to a point where they can live on their own. And this is one step in that process. In regards to the parking, we chose an analysis. We didn't choose it. We found it, or Mr. White found it. And in section 18.4.3.30, the Planning Commission can look at alternatives to the parking standards. So within this submittal, this is a City of San Diego parking study, where it demonstrated that 47.5% of low-income occupants did not even own a vehicle to park within the parking lot. We didn't use 47 or 40% as a parking standard if they didn't park there. So we used Eugene, Oregon standard of 0.67 spaces per dwelling unit, which we felt is a conservative number to use as a proposed parking standard versus close to 50%. So with that, the calculations would be, we have 25 studios, which would equal 17 spaces if we use the 0.67 spaces per dwelling unit. And we are providing 20 for the studios and still having the other 10 for the other two-bedroom and three-bedroom facilities. So this also can come into play with the joint use and shared parking with Parcel 2 as part of that partition, where we feel that there's a point we are overparked for that, but if we start sharing and using joint use, there's ample space to not have any conflicts with parking allocations. I'd like to briefly just cover the letter by Mr. Brandy about the parking concern that he had on Lit Way. And, you know, again, we understand there's a parking problem on Han Street, but again, we don't believe that we're going to have overflow parking to the degree that they're going to park off-site. There's going to be plenty of room at the facility and also shared facilities once we get back on parcel two. Okay.
So I'd like to talk briefly about the, or maybe not too briefly, about the bioswale. So we are apparently, we have to ask for an exception because it talks about using treatment swales. I just want to point out that, we initially, when we looked at this with the original pre-app at IRCU, it looked like the obvious thing to do was to put a bioswale at that north end of the property. Well, there are some constraints with that. The lot does slope to the north. We're raising the parking lot up in order to meet our stormwater retention. We have ADA requirements. You can't exceed 5% to get to your building from the sidewalk. So we're limited on how far we can drop down. And then once we get down there, it's a little bit complicated to explain, but I just went through with the engineer again to see if we could put a bioswale. And what we determined was we would have to raise the parking lot up another 2 to 3 feet, which would then put the parking car lights at the top of a 6-foot fence. So we don't want to do that. So that's why we're keeping it down. So in order to mitigate that, we're using a system of retaining the water on the parking lot, filtering it through these 3.6 foot square porous paving, and then running it through a biodynamic separator or hydrodynamic separator that then goes to Parker Street. This is an accepted method by the Grove Valley Sewer Service. It's in their guidelines as an accepted standard, and it's been accepted by the Public Works Department in multiple conversations with the city. So the intent for us was to keep that down, so we're mitigating that, mitigating the impact on the neighbors by keeping it as low as possible. So we're asking for not having the bioswale on it, no property line. We did meet with the neighbors. We presented some our drawings to the neighbors and discussed with them. And some of the things we anticipated, one of the main things we anticipated was the lighting, because we had heard that there had been complaints by the neighbors of the credit union drive-through, which has a really high level of standard by, I think it's the state requirements for security, that they have to have these high standards of light. So what we did in talking with the electrical engineers, we asked them to give us their lowest level of lighting illumination on the parking lot that their standards recommend, and that's, you know, good for security for the building itself. So we have this lighting layout that shows that a lighting photometric diagram that, you know, the parking lot lights will be on the north side of the parking lot will be shielded so that no light goes directly over the property. The other thing that we did was they proposed 22 foot light standards. We said no, we want lower. They said okay, 14 foot, and we still need the minimum required and for safety and the numbers are kind of, they're lower than standard. The other thing that we did was the lights will they go off, and they were set on a motion sensor, and they reduced to 30% of their total lighting level. So if nobody's back there, the lights dim down. And I believe that time frame can be adjusted to allow somebody to get from their car to the building in a safe manner before that lighting illumination drops down. And they're all separately motion sensors, so not all of them go on and somebody goes into the parking lot. We also proposed, as a mitigation, we're putting more street trees on the north property line to help buffer from the neighbors. So the city standards recommend one street tree per 7 parking spaces. We have 4, 1, 2, we have 5 per, one per 4. So we added peninsulas, broke in the parking lot up more in order to get more trees back there to help mitigate that impact from the neighbors. So where we could have 1 for 7, we have 1 for 4, and then 2 for 5, and then 1 for 4, and then 1 for 4. There is a hedge that will be planted there, and it will. That was brought up by the neighbors, and I wasn't aware that the landscape architect had already proposed a hedge that would grow in that buffer up to 8'2" to also help mitigate the impact. We're not going to say that there's not going to be light. You're not going to see light. It's not like the street light on the street. You know, you're going to see the glow of the lights. It can't mitigate that. So the lights are shielded. They're all night sky compliant. So we've tried to address that. But there's only so much we can do. So we've kept it as low as we can. The other thing about the bioswale, the other difficulty of the site is that the site is rather impervious. And RVSS requires a minimum infiltration of 23 inches per hour for porous paving and parking lots. The soil impervious is a design infiltration rate of 0.03 inches per hour, 1/10 the minimum required. So we're using this alternative method to deal with the stormwater on the site.
Okay, thank you for your presentation. Any questions?
I have a question of what's happening in your upper left corner. I think that's actually the southwest corner. is that recreational?
It's well, we're not required to have recreation space. So what we're providing is an outdoor space or a walking path. There's a patio that people can go out on. So we're required to have 10% of our building area for the whole shadow plan in public space, public plaza versus public space. So we're providing that in front of
any other questions?
Well, he's still answering.
This is a public space that's shared and it's kind of open to everybody. Anybody. And this area back here is kind of an open, there'll be some grass.
It's a landscape. Is it going to be fenced?
No, it is fenced now. It won't be separate, but it's fenced at the property line.
At the property.
And there is an access easement to this back property, the Toso property. And that's
actually one of the reasons I'm wondering, one of the current concerns that I've had is in the future, if this property went out of affordable housing, there would be a greater parking need. And I'm just wondering if that space would be available to additional parking.
Yeah, there would be, but one of the concerns here is, we could over here adjacent to the building, but here the neighbors have a rather large tree, and we felt we wanted to keep as far away from that. We're still kind of encroaching into it, but we wanted to keep away from that as much as possible so that we didn't harm the tree. So we could have added, But as Cindy testified last time, their parking need for 30 years.
Right.
At least. Yeah,
it's credible. I'm just wondering about the future.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could be redesigned.
And that's
in the future.
Question on your walkway, on your, whatever you're calling, the causeway that goes between the two buildings.
Yes.
And the height appears to be about 14 feet above the grade.
Fire truck access.
Right. And the last time I read the paper, they're planning on getting a new truck that's taller.
And I've been working with the fire marshal more than 3 times. I actually created a drawing of the truck that they want to purchase.
Right, they may never get it, but we need
right.
It.
Right, and I've shown that it clears.
It clears?
Yeah. So we had to work with the driveway grade. We had a maximum driveway grade that we could have, and we had to look at it as it's approaching that and to make sure it didn't hit it.
Okay.
That's
and
we held it down as low as possible.
Yeah, that was my question.
Did you guys have, a slide of how the project meets the shadow plan far? I just that went by me too fast. Can you show me again how it hits the 55% or whatever you said in the materials?
Yeah.
The plan was for the entire site, including the road site, because they were far under the parking.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, I'm just not sure what it was.
I don't know that I
they're over or something.
In your packet, I think the last, I think 11 by 17 has the
couch.
Has the couch.
I thought there was a slide that flew by in the past. Was there? There wasn't.
I don't think that.
Okay. No.
I think it was the original shadow plan that we submitted from the road coming in. And really the difference is we went from the 65-35
to the commercial residential. So it wasn't the far, that was the uses.
It was the uses, right.
Gotcha.
Do you know who's going to develop the last piece here?
We do not. Originally, as we stated last time, Columbia Care, the director, is interested in putting a clinic out there. He has since passed, and the new director doesn't have that as a priority. So we don't know. It could go that way, or it's going to be sold. And ideally, in my mind, it would sell with the church property, which is now on the market, so that it could be developed as one. They could be defined. But that's...
It's going to have to be commercial.
It has to be commercial, yes.
Or non-residential. Not commercial.
Non-residential.
Michael?
Okay, so you said the bioswell, or I mean your alternative for the bioswell was what you're doing, and you said it's going to go to Parker Street.
Yes.
So, but that means you're going to put it, that there's that line that goes to Parker Street. It's not running through the property.
It's going to cross, it's underground.
Right. No, it goes to Parker Street. It goes to the curb. And it's what it is meter, so mm-hmm. it's in it. And
right.
So it was already approved. It's already in place. It's all ready to go.
They got an easement at the time of the credit union development.
Okay.
Well, the easement was in place from the prior purchasing.
Further questions? Great. Thank you very much. If you could stay close. We're here from the public. And before we do that, could you grab those drawings? The drawings from the last project.
Oh.
It's like cognitive dissonance. Thank you for public testimony. Folks have, you limit your testimony to 3 minutes. We appreciate it.
I already did.
You already did. You were.
And you said you seconded.
You already.
No, was it to 10:30 though?
Yeah, I said to 10:30.
Oh, okay.
You were talking.
Actually, 10:30 tomorrow.
So, it's the first time we're going to talk about this. I sat here for 6.5 hours through the last couple meetings, and if I need 5 minutes, can't I have 5 minutes?
Yep. Karen Zegger.
Did you have one from Jay Hammond and Tara Elder? There was
three, and if people need a couple more minutes,
We'll
let you go on. But we do need to be done by 10:30.
Oh,
wow. We turn into note. I mean, our deliberation and everything. We turn into pumpkins at 10:30.
No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Past my bedtime, too. My name is Karen Zerger. I live at 486 CN Hills Drive in Eagle Point, Oregon, and I work at Rome Credit Union. I just wanted to remind those of you that I believe at all the faces that were here, that Rome has been working with the architect to create this site plan from the beginning of the time that we wanted to submit plans to make sure that we were coordinating appropriately with either Columbia Care or, at the time, another entity, if we could find one, to build affordable housing per request. And we continue to do that. We will continue to do what we can to support the project and to make sure that we get affordable housing, if possible, at this site, because that was our intent, and that's what we told you our intent was, and we want to stand by that. So that's all.
Great. Thank you so much for your comment. Jeff Westergaard?
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jeff Westergaard. I live at 1673 Parker Street, which is across the street from the immediate neighbors to this parcel. I I'd just like to speak to the planning professionals here, the commission. You have a duty to the whole city in guiding the plans for the whole city. My concerns are a few. I'd like to preface it by saying 8 months ago, I took in a homeless brother of a friend with mental health issues for a week or a month to stay at my house. And he's still there 8 months later, and he received some services from Columbia Care. And we're involved in getting him housing and getting him, bringing his mother from Utah and trying to find an apartment in the city. I am totally interested in low-income housing and mental health facilities in our town. My question is this the right place for it? And are we trying to shoehorn something of enough size for the project developers in a space that is too small? And I'm concerned from as far as the incline and the issues of raising the parking lot and the different things to make it conform with the incline of the towards the north, towards my neighbor's backyards. When Rogue, and I'm also a member of Rogue Federal, and when Rogue was built, we began conversations and letters, emails, and phone calls with Rogue about their parking lot lights, which have 35 or 40 LED bulbs in each one shining down. And from 100 feet away, from the backyard of a house bordering on this project, I can read a large print children's book by those parking lot lights right now today. That's how bright it is at night. We asked them to put a rim around the lights so that it would only shine down, and they haven't. And I just feel like LED technology has grown when we haven't kept up with it as far as the focusing of the light down in an area. And I'm frustrated that I feel like security could be fine at the parking lot without being able to see the lights from at an angle from downhill. I can see not just the glow of the lights, but the actual light from the bulbs in my living room across the street on Parker Street from that day. So I don't trust that this project will have, if they raise the parking lot and have 14-foot lights there, I believe they're going to be shining right into my neighbor's back windows and affecting the tone in the community of my street and degrading. And already I had three people talk about selling their houses and moving out of there. So it's had an effect already on the street. I'm also concerned that my septic is at the slightest grade possible from my house to the street. And just tonight hearing about things, I know about the accident that happened somewhere in town where somebody's house was filled with sewage. So Rogue tapped into Parker Street. This new project taps into Parker Street. Storm runoff goes into Parker Street. Better make sure that doesn't go downhill onto the odd side of the street of Parker Street, which is downhill from all of us. So I'm very concerned about lighting. I'm very concerned about the slope and the sewage. And I'm concerned about the shoehorn effect. And when we spoke with Rogue, they made a comment of saying, well, you won't see those bright bank lights because there'll be a three-story building blocking them. So my final concern is, will the mentally challenged, the mental health services be, is that the right place for people who will have those parking lot lights from the bank as well as that ATM drive-up right there on the border of several units right there? And I just want you to take a hard look at, is too much being shoehorned into too small of a space? And in general, we're seeing with all these developments, us who live below the boulevard in our town are feeling unfairly densified in this pursuit of a worthy goal, low-income housing, higher density, things like that. So I just want to know, is there another parcel that's larger that would be better for something like this, or something that, that I also have one more concern about. I first heard about a mixture of uses of housing. Now I hear the caretakers, the night watchmen, a couple of two-bedroom units, the rest bare-bones studios. So it's really, the character of the development is intensely focused on helping mentally mental health services.
If you could finish up. Great. Thank you. See, you have Jay Hammond?
Yeah, I believe we have kids at home.
Okay. Tara Elder?
That's me. Thanks. I live at 1665 Parker Street. I was a little late to the game about getting the information in the meeting because it was the middle of summer and I was a school teacher and I was traveling for the whole time of my summer. But I got all the information. I got the information off the City of Ashland website, and my husband sent it through to us. And so there's some things that I think are interesting about the population. The qualifications to live there are that you have to be diagnosed with a serious mental health and illness. You have to be able to and willing to manage your own meds. You have to, if you're an alcoholic or a drug dependent, you can be in treatment. If you're willing to be, these are all written in the description. So my concern I have, it's right next to a park that I love hearing the sounds of the kids at. It's right next to a school that I substitute teach in when I'm not working at my own school. That's another half a mile away. I have children, and we have kind of a transient street already. We have a lot of people that use the street to get through from Lit to Walker to get up and walk along Ashland Street. We have some other things that I read that were interesting to me are that there's a crisis response. So I didn't realize until just now how the housing all looked out, and then I was listening and I hear that it's 30 units, it's 3 stories high. I don't know when we started building 3-story units in Ashland. Like, that's like hardly ever happened if you look around or drive around. So that kind of is a concern. I heard somebody last week say something about their view, and I looked out the window and I was like, oh, this might actually be the last time I see that mountain. A caretaker, a person that's there to help with the needs of laundry and stuff like that to teach them. So now we're down to 28 units that are really for low income. We're also saying that 13 of those units, in one of the information says that 13 of those units could be for like public, not actually mental health, but used for public, for low income vets, people with other that aren't in the diagnosis of mental illness or that are singletons, like the by themselves. So they call it 100% multifamily, but the definition of family is that it's people living together in a household. So I'm kind of curious about that, and then it goes to parking, and it creates all this stuff. So we're going to give them the shadow plan of 50-50 instead of 65-35, is my guess. It's already probably passed. Of being commercial space. So I'm curious, if you look around that community, the two open facilities on Ashland Street, the mall there, and then the one next to Mix that maybe she'll build something, maybe she won't, that are currently just sitting there vacant and have been forever with commercial space. That's just unattended. So what commercial space is going to go in there? More offices like the ones that are in other places? So, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, you've been waiting 6 hours. Thank you.
I've been coming back because I didn't know about it until I did. So I wonder about that. I'm curious about what kind of building, you know, like that is going to go in there. I also want to know why Josephine County wants to dump 13 of their clients on Jackson County. They All Care has said that they are more than willing to send their mentally ill to Ashland and that they can use 13 of the rooms right now. So I'm concerned about that. I was also wondering why, I don't know who it is, but Mr. Gordon wrote to a city dyer saying that you should, we don't want to not persuade you to re-put in your proposal even though you have to come up with 65% of the property, the ground floor being commercial. I'm curious about why we're pushing for that when this just clearly doesn't seem like the right space for a mental health facility. I did some research, and I do hear that actually mental health, I heard, people that need mental health or have mental illness probably get picked on more than they do the picking. So that's not necessarily it just makes me anxious. I kind of think part Parker is low income. Parker Street is the only place I will ever own a home in Ashland because I can't afford anywhere else. I've lived here since 1989 and I'm super stoked to be here. I volunteer in my community in every way I can. This feels pretty devastating for my family that actually lives in a family household. I just heard something about high level of security, that you have to have a high level of security for this building. I want to know why. Why is there a high level of security needed? I want to know what the very nice man that designed the plans just couldn't come up with the numbers, but just asked you to, you know, it's lower than standard. So you're supposed to go back and research that and find that out for yourself before you make a decision tonight. That just kind of felt like, okay, I would like, he looks great, everything looks great, but I'm not sure what that means to me because I don't actually know what the numbers are. And so I've sat here and I've listened and I've kind of learned that hopefully you guys will be your best judgment and actually go look at it and see what it looks like to people that don't live on that street. I have neighbors that are moving, so it already has an effect. I see them every day cleaning up their homes to move. And it takes away the community feeling that we actually have on Parker Street and in Hunter's Hollow, as they call it. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Finally, Keith Hinty.
Hi, I'm Keith Hinty. I'm at 1680 Parker Street. So, I don't know if we still have that map, but you might have it on the chart. I'm the one that's right over the fence.
Okay.
Right in the middle there.
We've got lots of maps.
And on either side of me are renters.
Yeah.
So maybe in a way I speak a little bit to them. I guess my feeling, I've been there for 12 years, by the way, and I knew that something was coming to that big lot sooner or later. And the credit union built there about a year ago. And I think they're a two-story, and the lights were an impact, really noticeable for me. I got these little special curtains because the light comes in my back window. But this is going to be three stories, and I understand maybe 35, 40 feet high, and quite a bit closer to the property line of the neighbors there. So that's an issue. It's the proximity of it is a concern. One of the other things is mentioned was the outdoor space. Remember that kind of, you're sort of like a path over there. I read or heard that was going to be the designated smoking section. And that would be, for the residents, they'd be able to go out and smoke there. And it's quite close to the back of the property fence. Just another concern. So some of this is just design stuff to think about. The septic issue is a concern. The amount of septic that's going through to the old pipes on Parker. I've heard that kind of the septic system there for Parker Street is aging. I don't have any exact information on that. That's what I've heard. The other thing that I just wanted to mention is there is ATM traffic that's already happened. In the credit union, I'm a member of the credit union, and it's busy. It's starting to happen over there because that branch is really needed, big branch. So cars are coming in there, and I don't know how this is going to, maybe they'll have a totally separate driveway, but it seems like there's going to be a traffic, ATM traffic, merging with this other traffic. I think that's it. I'm on the north side, so I'm looking south. So I'm part of the north. So this is what I'm going to see as I see some mountains over the top of the credit union now. But this will be like a 40-foot, two buildings, like right there, real close. That's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any written rebuttal by the applicant? Just briefly for a few minutes.
I'm Cindy Dyer, the Morgan Director at Columbia Care, and I just wanted to speak to the actual population base. And while our primary target population that we serve are people with behavioral health issues and veterans, we have a large program for veterans as well. But I think some of the concerns that we're saying is that We develop all over the state of Oregon, and we have a variety of housing types. We have group homes, facilities, independent housing. This is on independent housing. So when we talk about acuity levels, one in four people in statistically in Jackson County have some form of mental illness, and that's varying degrees, everything from depression to something that's more acute. These are people that can live independently. We do have staffing there, and we are going to be working with AllCare, and so we do have some supportive housing. And what that is AllCare is one of our coordinated care organizations, and Jackson Care Connect is the other. These are the two insurance. So we're not importing people from Josephine County. AllCare is already here. They just happen to be one of the insurance choices for low-income people. So just kind of clarifying some of the things.
You really need to address it. Who your residents are is not a land use criterion.
Okay. All right. Wanted to allay some fears. That was all. Yeah.
Okay,
and the security is for the residents walking to their cars, not security.
The word is really safety for the...
Safety. Walking to your cars and lighting. Yeah.
The security is really what the bank is required to have, lighting for security.
Right, on that side.
So I think I misspoke.
Yeah.
So the lights are shielded, and I can talk to the lighting engineer again, because I have this idea, I got a lot of pushback from it, to put in light bollards on that north property line, but it would require putting one in between each parking stall, so at each line. And we can look at that. I mean, I pushed her on it, she rejected it, and I can talk to her again about that. So that could help. And I'm not sure we're going to meet the minimum safety requirement, but we can look at that.
Anything else? Any questions for that, Troy?
Right. Her pushback was she could not meet the safety requirement for the light if you put the baller to each.
Yeah, there's a minimum. There's a minimum.
Is it 1 point?
It's like it's a minimum 1.0.
Yeah, it's 1.0.
Okay.
She
couldn't meet that in the middle of the parking lot. Right.
But if she, okay. I think maybe a little closer to that. But anyway, that's the answer.
Did she have a question?
I was about the lighting and that.
Oh, okay. Anyone else? Great. Thank you. We will close the public hearing. Discussion of the proposal? Any concerns you wish to raise?
Well, I'll just say that the main concern I had about this was the issue of relying on a shadow plan when the lots are not under common ownership. And I understand that the argument is, and I mean, I think what we have to bear in mind about this is that the commission initially rejected Grove Credit Union's plan, partly because they could not develop themselves, with the shadow plan, because they were prohibited from building. And so council overturned that decision and basically wanted to allow Rogue to create exactly what they've come to us having created. So I think that's the reality. The question is whether or not the code essentially permits us to rely on the shadow plan to satisfy the FAR requirements and the minimum residential versus commercial, even though we don't have common ownership anymore, which would typically be the case. And, perhaps so. Staff seems to be of the opinion that we can consider it a phased development plan, and that there are other examples where common ownership doesn't exist when the site is developed. And some of you land use people probably know better than I do whether that is in fact typical. But that was my main concern. Otherwise, I'm really happy, despite the impact on the neighbors, which I hear and understand and appreciate. This is exactly what the Ashland City Council wanted to see happen here, and I think it's a very thoughtful design. I really appreciate the effort that was made to build this out in the way that council wanted it to be developed. So I'm very appreciative of that, and I'm in favor of the project.
Okay. Any other comments?
Yeah, I think we have a problem in our code with the definition of a lot.
and it's something we need to address in addition to the definition of open space. But you know, road credit supports the project. It really is sort of a single project on an overall site. It becomes loose enough to where I can support it. So does anyone want to make a motion for the discussion? I thought the plans were real clear. Any concerns about the stormwater? Sounds like they've addressed it. It's a difficult situation that they've addressed it.
Oh, that's because, I mean, I do have concerns about the stormwater, but it is our practice to rely on engineering reports, and they've got it designed by an engineer.
Yeah.
And we have to assume that Public Works will make sure that the capacity is there to accept the...
Yeah, you really don't want to be designing this for water.
I don't know that we really have anything more we can say about it.
Yeah.
Except the light. I thought that basically our lighting says that you cannot have a project which the light spills over into neighbor's project.
I thought it was a no spillover standard.
Period.
Yeah.
So how is
no, it's a no direct illumination. I'm just looking at that. It's no direct illumination.
But that's just not this project. That includes the credit thing.
Yeah.
So how come they're doing this and they're here?
Good question.
Now we have another project coming along that's going to go the same route. So the first thing I want to try to put in is we need to push back on the lighting that they're proposing to get it lower than what they're proposing. See if we can, because they said they can take another look at it, then maybe we can get those bollards down to where I think they should actually be, which is about 3 or 4 foot bollards that are out there right along at each car. But I don't want to push it that far. I want to push it far enough to need to be taken a look at to get the light levels they're proposing lower. And clearly, no direct lighting going into the properties. And somehow or other, we need to push back on the credit union. And I don't know if that's probably not in our purview.
That's probably the federal workable purview.
Do we have a proposed condition on this? I just got to follow up on this one. Usually, it's just a standard condition that everything needs to be down with. What's happened here?
Well, from the testimony that I heard tonight, it sounds like there could be a potential code violation. I mean, due to the height of the existing, because if neighbors can see the actual source of illumination, that by definition would be something we probably need to look into.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then with respect to this project, I think that those go over at a minimum and a hortatory condition that, you know, take a look at it and make sure that we can see if there's any possibility with working with staff to get those bollards lower.
Right, because also once this building goes in, the idea of the drive-through lighting will now be shining into this building windows. So the no spillover now will even affect the new building. Mm-hmm. From the credit union.
From the credit union, yeah.
Right, because now it's a lot
closer. It's obnoxious lighting.
So if it's obnoxious lighting and it's that far away, so therefore, this is a double-edged sword on our side, you know. Their parking lot lighting can't be spilling over into the neighbors in any way, shape, or form. They need to be looking at lower levels. Need to be shielded, as is already stated. Then somehow or other, we're going to run into problems with the credit union shelling light onto this building and this building.
I know a good lawyer they can hire. Not me.
Well, we know you're not a good lawyer, so that's good.
I'll make the motion.
Go ahead. We're generating.
Right. I move to approve with, you know, all the plan and with just the addition that we would like to see the findings come back with the most stringent possible lighting conditions that you guys can put.
I'll take another step at seconding.
Second. any further discussion?
Was there something on open space you felt needed to be discussed?
No.
No. Okay. That was just a stab in the dark.
No.
Okay.
If any further speaking to your motion, any further discussion? We'll get a roll call vote.
Commissioner Thompson?
Yes.
Pierce?
Yes.
Dawkins?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Harper?
Yes.
Bidlin?
Yes.
Norton?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay. With 10 minutes to spare,
I think also most people don't want to do.